kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
My hand is tired. I'm fine.
Your hand is tired.
There's an achievement for hitting the A button 10,000 times, and I am at 8,516, 17, 18, 19, 20. My hand hurts.
When gunning for achievements goes very wrong.
I need a turbo controller.
Oh, that's the takeaway. I need a turbo controller.
not you have an achievement issue, it's that you need a turbo By the way, Pernell's here. Pernell, how are you doing? Chris Taylor will be here later on in the show. But before the party cast happens, we have a guest joining us this week. Kicking off our 600s, episode 601 in style, Don Thacker. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing, sir?
I'm kind of pissed off, actually. I just now found out there's a party cast that I'm not invited to. I'm the pre-party guest. That's not fair. I mean, there's a party, I should have been around for the party. I don't know what's happening.
When you're here, it's always party time.
All right. I'll accept that. Hi, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's great to have you back on. I believe the last time you were on the show, I had completely different co-hosts.
Oh, yes, totally. I don't know any of these people, these humans.
Hi, I'm Cole. I'm new here.
Nice to meet you. I'm Cole.
And I'm Pernell. I'm inhuman.
Yes.
By new here, I mean I've been here for 380 episodes.
I don't know what episode number I was originally on. It was a while. It's a minute. It's been a minute.
It has been a hot minute. You have in veritable every way blown up since you first came on the show. You first came on to talk about a game, and now you're on to talk about a series of videos you've done with Devolver.
Oh, is that why I'm here?
That great. Taken the world by storm.
Kind of. Yeah, a little weird. It's weird to think, because it's mostly just some shit I wrote this one time. But yeah, no, it's that's a thing. Whew. I guess it's all just some shit I wrote this one time, right? I mean, all the stuff that anyone does, really.
Yeah.
What's the Iliad and the Odyssey? That's just some shit some guy wrote this one time.
True. Every video game is just some shit some guy wrote one time.
Yeah, like The Last of Us 2. Yeah, some team of people just sat down and typed some shit.
If you ever want to have an existential crisis, stop and think about the reality that all that shit that was wrote one time, it all boils down to 26 letters.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty legit. I use all kinds of weird characters and shit. I use most of the standard general markup language in my stuff. But yeah, no, that's a thing. It's 302 characters. That's a lot of a lot of words and a lot of work done in 302 characters.
Yep. Every book, every song, everything boils down to an alphabet.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And now that's your existential crisis for the night. You're welcome.
Oh, no, listen, you don't know me. I am well prepared to deal with that particular thing. It's just the millions of other existential crises that I am not prepared for that I think generate the kind of stuff that people like that I do.
Such as? Give us some examples.
Oh, I made a movie this one time called Motivational Growth. It was the first narrative feature film on the Steam digital distribution platform. It's about a guy who tries to kill himself and fails miserably and wakes up to find himself face to face to a large chunk of talking fungus played by Jeffrey Combs, the reanimator. Or Wei Yun from Deep Space Nine, if you're into that, or that one guy from the one episode of Babylon 5, or a dude from Peter Jackson's The Frighteners, if you're a young one. Anyway, that was a movie I made a long time ago. So 10 years ago? Jesus. Wow, 10 years ago. And that got me in bed with Devolver. They published it. That's how I got in bed with Devolver. And I've been doing a bunch of live-action work for video games, as well as another feature film I did. I did a live-action support series for that game Soma that came out. I did the live-action thing for that. There's a whole thing. I've done, I think, 100 and now as of today. Tomorrow will be 110. We're at 110. But But as of today, literally, I've got 109 projects that we've done, live action stuff, in-game, marketing material, narrative, whatever, and 107 of them are related to video games. So that's crazy. I'm pitching a large scale movie thing to a giant studio next week.
Really?
It's also game related. So I can't talk anything about it or I'll get killed. There's a cyber
robots. The robots. Yep. The golden robots.
An extra life and then start rambling. You're good.
I can see a glint from a building across the way. It's somebody flipping up the sniper scope, ready to put one in me. But yeah, no. So I make movies. I make games as well. I got two teams working on two video games. There's a video game that I'm working on called Star Mazer DSP, which is a roguelike horizontal scrolling shooter.
Yeah, that's what you were here the first time about.
I think I was actually there for Star Mazer, and that's DSP takes place in the Star Mazer universe, but is not Star Mazer. It is a sister game and it's a side game. Technically, and I'll give you a hot take exclusive just for your podcast. No one has heard this before.
No.
Star Mazer DSP is actually an arcade game that exists in the Star Mazer universe. In the game Star Mazer, one of our characters' favorite game is Star Mazer DSP. There's a big reason, because the Star Mazer is an actual object in the Star Mazer universe, and Star Mazer itself is a giant narrative point-and-click adventure game with a horizontal scrolling shooter action mechanic. But it's taken forever to make. We went through some – I had to sue somebody at one point, and there was a big drama to do with the game, but it's back on track. It's been back on track for about a year. We got a long way to go still, but yeah, we're working on it. Got a whole team. I've got a team in Romania, a team of devs in Romania. I've got an artist in the Philippines, an artist in Spain. I've got a musician in Austin, Texas. It's a whole big team, an international team kind of working together for that. And for Star Mazer DSP, the sister game, I've got two artists in Russia, a programmer in LA, and I write and direct all the stuff. So I kind of, you know, check in every day and kind of produce the stuff and make sure everything's going the way it's supposed to be going, and write the stories and record all the voice. Both games have a bunch of voice lines of dialogue. In Star Mazer DSP, we actually have over 4,100 voice lines of dialogue for a shoot 'em up, which is very rare to have that many lines of dialogue in a horizontal scrolling shooter. But that exists.
Just a little.
So yeah, that's the game stuff. I'm working on that. But yeah, movie stuff. I do movies too, and that's what I'm working on now.
What movies? I know, like we mentioned earlier, the Devolver Direct that happened. What, 2 weeks ago?
That's Devolver Direct 2020. We started in 2017. I got a call from Devolver, and they're like, "Hey, man," and I'm like, "Hey, guys," and they're like, "Hey, listen, we have an opportunity to do an E3 talk." Like an E3 press conference. And we're not going to do that. We're going to do something cool. So we worked out. I worked with Nigel over at Devolver, and we sussed out a story and figured out what to do, came up with a bunch of gags. What's funny is in 2017, because it was nascent and it was new and it was we'd never done it before, the 2017 version, it's really rough and really edgy and really it really hits really hard. But what no one knows is we actually shot twice as much footage.
Really?
As what you see. We cut so much because we shot so many whole segments and little story beats and all this other stuff that we shot. I have some friends who are pissed off because they were in it. They spent 2 days shooting with us, and they were on the cutting room floor.
Aww.
And, you know, but because we cut it together, and it was like we got me more so than Devolver. We got kind of cold feet about it. Like, hey guys, we're doing some crazy shit here. And 2017 was very crazy. There's lots of woman's head explodes in that thing. Guy's arm gets ripped off, all kinds of stuff. And it's supposed to be a press conference, right? The whole gag was we act like it's a regular press conference. And then, you know, within minutes, we devolve it into something super crazy, but still grounded in some kind of reality. So the gag is, the trick is, the secret of these things is that we're making some commentary on our industry, the games industry, but we're doing it in a playful way because you know, Devolver is a company. I run a company. My company primarily makes marketing materials, right? So our gag is we make fun of people who make marketing for games and people who make games that they sell. What companies are those? That's Devolver and Imago. It's my company. I make marketing material and they make games you sell. So we're not going to poke fun of people who aren't us, right? The whole thing is set up around we're in an industry where there's a bunch of other people who make games and make art and make marketing for those games and art and stuff. But we're not going to shit on those people. That'd be lame because those people are trying to do it. If everything from the independent developer all the way to EA, they're all trying to do something. Whether or not that something is lascivious or nefarious or whatever, it isn't really our commentary. Our commentary is more, you know, what are things that everyone kind of does that might not be the greatest? And what's something that nothing – I don't believe there's anything in – anything we've written for the Devolver Directs that that Devolver hasn't had to go through itself, and I think that's a huge wonderful point for Devolver. Big ups to that company. They're an incredible set of people. Anyway, my point is, we started in 2017, made a whole bunch of commentary, but got scared a little bit, and so we left half of it. People were like, "It was great, but it was too short." Well, guys, there's 20 minutes of that just sitting in a hard drive.
Are we going to see a director's cut?
I don't know. I've been trying to let them give me the 4-hour block where I can just have the whole thing from 2017 to 2020. Like 2020 was a 46-minute piece by at least one American film standard. That's a feature film.
So you're about to say, you try to make a press conference that goes longer than Avengers Endgame?
Well, I think we could. I think we could do it. I think we can make it happen. So yeah, 2017 happened and it was a big hit. People loved it and people liked it a lot more than we thought. And we had nothing to be afraid of because people were ready to hear the kind of commentary we were making. So 2018, we came back with a harder, rougher, more punchy kind of stance. And it was good, except, we try not to repeat ourselves ever. Like, that's a big deal. We don't want to say the same thing or do the same thing, or we don't want the shtick to get old. In fact, I've read some reviews and people are like, well, they're just doing the same thing again. But if they watched it, you'd see that we're not actually doing the same thing again.
I got to be honest with you, though, too. Let's be real here. Even if you did, I mean, is that any worse than what every press conference that's being spoofed is doing, too?
No, they're doing the same thing every year.
Yours is entertaining, though. Yeah, but yours is entertaining.
I watched somebody watch the 2020. I love this. I freaked out. This guy's watching it and, he's like, yeah, no, it's funny and, you know, it's creative and, you know, they got all these actors and they did all this stuff, but, you know, it's just not my cup of tea. And the other guy was like, there were four people. One of the other guys was like, yeah, why not though? Like, I'm cool with it. And he's like, yeah, well, you know, I just like games. I like to see the gameplay. And the other guy was like, yeah, but what if you get gameplay and a bunch of entertainment?
Yeah.
And the dude was just, his face just blanched because it was like 4D chess. Like he'd been checkmated in a fifth dimension.
And that's the biggest thing though, when you think about it too, because when you when it comes to Devolver's announcements, right? Like if it was a normal set of announcements, you'd have a guy on stage doing the usual thing, like, we are proud to present this game we worked hard on, and they'll show a clip or whatever. But if someone's not concerned about any of that, they'll just go to YouTube later and just watch the highlights, i.e. the clips, and ignore the whole conference. Whereas your stuff, the conference is the entertainment, and the video game announcements are something you're just getting as a bonus, if anything.
Yeah, no, the best part about it is, like, when we released the press conference, all of the trailers are released in real time with press conference. Once it shows in the press conference, you can go to the Devolver YouTube channel and check it out right there instantly. Like, you don't have to care about the conference. Nobody's being forced to watch a bunch of free entertainment, right? So this guy who'd been 4D checkmated looks across, like, it was almost comical because they're in those little windows, right? It's a podcast and they were, or whatever, a viewing, I don't know, a Twitch stream. It's the future. People do crazy shit. It was one of these things. And the guy looks over as though he's looking through the other two people at the guy. And he's like, well, you know, they don't have to do that. Like, his response was, we didn't have to make something fun and entertaining. We could have just shown him trailers. And yeah.
What, dude, the fuck, Don? Totally, why did you have to go and entertain us for 46 minutes? Like,
thanks for being engaging.
You know how much effort that shit takes? I could have just not. Why would I?
Yeah, but don't not. Don't not. Don't not. So I'm telling you right now, I went to E3 2018, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm there. I hadn't been to E3 in a long time. This was my first time back, and it was like a whole new world, so to speak. And while I ultimately found enjoyment out of it, the luster was kind of gone. despite most things. But the thing that was the most engaging, contrary to what a lot of people wanted, what they're surprised when I say, is that was the crazy Devolver lot that was across the street from E3.
Woo-woo!
They had a balloon sticking up. It was just in the middle of a parking lot.
Oh, yeah.
And you guys ran all your stuff out of that booth. And the whole thing was just like, people were just like leaving E3 looking at us like, what the hell's going on over there? I'll see what's up with this shit. I've been to that
booth plenty of times. It's very good. They always have nice hot dogs and stuff there, sausages. It's good stuff. So check it. We did 2017, and then 2018, we tried to change it up. We offered actual products, right? We did the loot box coin. We had all kinds of crazy stuff. In 2019, we decided to change it up even further and add more characters and make it like a giant story. We try to do this gag every year. We end on a cliffhanger, and then the next year, we do that 90s thing where we're like previously on, but it's totally different, right? Like, remember when El Mariachi came out? Everybody was like, holy shit, El Mariachi is great. Then they did Desperado, and they basically reshot the last scene of El Mariachi with Antonio Banderas. And like, yeah, this is what actually happened, guys. Last time we had Antonio Banderas, when really they couldn't pay for like Antonio Banderas' lunch money with El Mariachi. So we do that. And in 2019, we produced sort of a movie version, right? Where we got all these extra characters and stuff. And then in 2020, we took that to the nth degree, and we did our phase one ending, right? We end that storyline so we can enter a new storyline for 2021. It's a big, long thing. I've been asked a whole bunch about a whole bunch of stuff, like, are they just saying gibberish? No, they're not. What's the future versus the future's future versus the future's future future? I actually have a giant timeline where they all make sense. I can actually describe it.
That's the future in your house.
Dude, it's crazy. Like, I come with a physics background, and I'm super into Nabokovian time theory, and I worked it out. The future is separate from the future's future, which is indeed separate from the future's future future, which is actually the future of the future's future, which is the future of the future. And the future of the future is now. And it's a whole thing. And if you guys want to know how it all works, I can tell you. I can lay it all out. It's a whole, like I said, I've got, you know, those like serial killer maps with the red string and stuff. Jesus. I got that all working in my office. Too bad we're not on video right now. You can see it. But yeah, it all makes sense. And it's all laid out pretty nicely. But yeah, it's a self-contiguous universe that all functions appropriately. And yeah, we try to make fun of stuff, mostly ourselves. And that's kind of the thing. Working with Devolver has been really interesting because none of the jokes they've ever pitched at me have ever been about someone else. They've never been, oh, you know, Bethesda's doing a blah, blah. No, never. It's only about skeevy marketing stuff that other people have offered as options for Devolver and other companies. It's always Devolver making fun of Devolver, and that's really fun. Like Devolver pitches. I think what was our first theme was tomorrow's horrendous business practices today or something like that. It was all very good, and at no point will we ever point a finger at someone else and say, look at what those people are doing. It's disgusting. Devolver's a game company. They're trying to make games. Not trying. They're succeeding ridiculously.
They're doing a pretty okay
games.
Job.
Yeah, they're doing a bang up job. But they're a company like every other, you know, publisher and game company, and they're dealing with that constant pull. I'm assuming, and I say dealing with in a very complicated way, because I'm going to say something and then I'm going to retract it. But I'm sure, because I don't know personally, but I'm sure they're dealing with all this. You know, we could just fuck our fans. We could just charge a bunch of money. We could add a bunch of DLC. We could do all these things and make money fast, hand over fist, and get out of it. Or we could be a stand-up company that holds our own and holds to our morals and holds to our code. And my primary contact at Devolver, though I love hanging out with all of them, is Nigel Lowry, who's my direct contact for the Devolver Directs. We kind of bang out the script together, and we work out all the gags and that sort of stuff. I can tell you that guy wouldn't want to take anything from anybody. That guy is as stand up a guy as you'll ever in your entire life meet. And it's kind of weird that he works in an industry that traditionally, you know, makes money hand over fist by fucking its clients, its customers, because they don't and they won't. And I think that's the fun of it, right? Because you have a moral eye looking at an industry where all of the peers, not all of the peers, a number of the peers are doing horrendous shit. And we get to look at that and say, you know, we could do that. But no, let's not. Let's make fun of it instead. Let's pretend like we do. Let's make up, you know, a fake CEO and a fake this and a fake that and do the whole thing and act like we're every other company or almost every other company, a number of other companies, one other company. I don't know. I don't want to make giant sweeping statements. But my point is, the fun is there because it's real. We're not saying anything that people don't already think, right? But we're definitely not saying anything about anybody in particular. And I think that's been a core tenet the entire time is we're not there to make fun of anyone specifically or really anyone. In fact, I don't know if you saw 2020, but I got a moment in there, 3 minutes and 9 seconds to just vent. It was a big struggle. I wrote it first and, you know, the notes that came back were, this is a little long-winded. And I'm like, yeah, but I need it. And then we did it. I recorded it and I sent off just with no context. I sent the recording and the notes came back. Oh no, man, you're saying a lot of shit here. It might be a bit heavy, for a press conference that's about to announce a game that people can download. And I was like, let me wrap it up. Let me put it all together. And I don't know if you saw 2020, but at the end of 2020, just before, and there's a 3-minute, 9-second monologue by Nina Struthers, where she talks about how we as an audience and we as gamers and we as in the industry have been had. We've been japed. We've been rooked. We've been taken advantage of by greed. And she goes on about this literally for 3 minutes, 9 seconds. And they probably wanted me to go 45 seconds, but
that 3 minutes that she was speaking? That was like pretty much like her speaking using your words at that point.
I mean, I write all the stuff, so she's always speaking using my words, but that was...
Oh, you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean. Yeah, yes, of course. That was my big moment. My like, okay, listen, this is the fourth one. We're wrapping up this storyline and we're going to jump into another storyline. I got to say what I've been trying to say this whole time. So if you look at the arc of the story from 2017 to 2020, 2017 is, hey, we're Devolver. Fuck you. We're going to take your money. You guys are garbage. Fuck the fans. Fuck everybody. We're here for greed. That's the joking statement we were making, right? And in 2018, the next version, like I said, people were saying they're just doing the same thing again, which we're not. If you watch 2018 for like all 21 minutes of it, you'll see that what we're actually saying is, hey, we did a thing last year. Everybody loved it. So we were like, this is stupid. You shouldn't buy into it. And you're back and you're buying into it a lot more. Well, fuck you then. We're going to sell you some shit you don't need because why would you do this? That's why you did loot box coin is a big joke, right? Like people were spending hundreds of dollars on loot box coin.
I wanted to buy one of those too.
Yeah, you could. We had it changing prices every 5 minutes.
People were buying it?
Dude, yes, we made we personally, and I say we, not just Devolver, in my living room, we manufactured fucking loot box coins with resin casting for days. Oh. We just produced these things, and we didn't sell them for a profit. They cost a lot of money to fucking make a thing. It wasn't meant to be a profit thing. It was meant to be a statement, right? But we would change the prices from like $15 to $150 to $220 to $2. Just it was constantly changing. It's kind of a gag, and people bought all of them. Every single last one of them was gone. I think we had to do another run of them.
So at every price point, so like for example, when you were at the $200 price point, people were buying them then.
Yes, but let's be clear. This was not a profitable venture. We had to hand build every single one of these fucking 400 plus loot box coins. We were doing resin casting. We had built all this big rigging equipment. It's a big mess. You normally would get a run of 10,000 from a manufacturing company. It would cost $10,000 or something, or, you know, 11.5 grand to produce 10,000 little plastic pieces. But we actually hand built and painted every single one of these things. All, I think in the end it was well past 500. We did by hand.
But then that leads to a quick question then in that regard. So, of course, you wrote the script and everyone acted out the parts and everything.
Yeah.
But I'm going to assume that when this all happened, you guys were kind of assuming / hoping that you might get like maybe 5 people to buy anything just out of like, well, of course, someone's going to do it. But overall, people would laugh at the joke, but not ask, like, I'm going to buy these coins. Right. Why not?
No, it was bonkers. It was bonkers watching the people tweet. So the joke worked because we were like, so you guys didn't get it last year. What about this year where we're going to offer a ridiculous thing that you can buy? And a bunch of people want them, like all of them. They were all bought, which is – now, those people weren't buying them because they're stupid. They were buying them because it's a collector's item now. Like this is a Devolver 2018 loot box coin. I don't know if you could sell them. I don't know. I have no idea about the tertiary market for a Devolver 2018 loot box coin. But they weren't buying them because people are dumb. They were buying them because we were making a big statement, and people were buying into the statement as a support system. And I don't think anybody, maybe one person who, I don't know, I'm assuming just because of statistics, there's one guy who was like, oh, I gotta buy it, and bought it. I'm pretty sure everybody else was in on the gag, right? And I think that's what made it kind of sell through. So in 2019, we came back and we're like, cool. Well, listen, 2017, we were like, publishers are garbage. We're a publisher, right? That was a joke. And then in 2018, we're like, hey, I thought we talked about this E3 thing. Why is it twice as big as it was last year? Look, this is not Devolver talking. This is Don Thacker talking. But in 2018, I watched, just before our press conference, I watched Todd Howard step out on stage, and for like no reason at the end of the press conference, he just, I don't know if you guys remember 2018, he literally just started fucking announcing shit that didn't, like, half of it's made up. Like, he was just like, and then we're going to do another fucking Elder Scrolls is coming. And he just did a title. And he was like, Starfield's coming. And there's like a title. And he's like, guess what, guys? Maybe another Fallout. I don't know. Fallout. And then it was just like the Fallout logo. And he was being dead serious. Like,
it's like it was, I'm watching the Devolver announcement right now.
Oh, yeah. It's what, I'm what I'm trying to say is I couldn't believe, like, what the fuck are you doing, man? You just announced a bunch of shit. You got Wolfenstein. You got all this other stuff. You got live action stuff. You spent $10 million on this fucking press conference, which is orders upon orders of magnitude more than we've spent on anything that we've done for Devolver. Just, you're just throwing money around. To be
fair, they had Andrew W.K. You guys didn't get Andrew W.K. yet.
That's true.
Yeah. Don't raise the bar because he's going to meet it.
Yeah, right. So here's my point, though. Like, why? Why did you need to go out there and just start dangling random shit? So then, between then and when we made our 2019, everybody started doing these like directs. Like Nintendo started doing directs, and Microsoft announced like a direct, and then Sony started announcing directs. Like you guys didn't get enough fucking marketing yet. We're gonna market between the giant marketing events. Your mind's gonna be fucking blown with how much marketing you're gonna get. So in 2019, of course, we did the Devolver Direct as a joke. Linda from marketing decides to take over and say, listen, fuck all this like live person on a stage shit. We're going to hack into her brain and we're going to do directs, which then, of course, to live up to the joke, we didn't do one. We didn't do a single one until the next year. We announced that we'd be releasing stuff all the time, and then we didn't, because why would we? That's the joke. So then in 2020, the gag is we've spent a year releasing directs all year, which we didn't do. But the joke is that we're inside of her mind, inside of Nina's mind, and Linda's gone mad with power, and she's totally insane, and blah, blah, blah. And it was just about announcing things, because I was that Todd Howard thing just stuck in my brain, this constant announce. Like, I'm not saying this is a Todd Howard thing. Todd Howard, I think, is a smart businessman who's surfing the wave, man. Everybody between 2018 and 2020, it's just announcement after announcement after announcement after announcement after just constant unstopping fucking announcements for everything. I was so into the idea of Death Stranding because it was Guillermo del Toro was in it. You got Nicholas Winding Refn's in it for no reason. You've got all kinds of stuff happening, and people talked about it for like 2 years. They just wouldn't shut the fuck up. I don't know how many times I had to like open up a browser to see Norman fucking Reedus's face looking at me carrying a little baby. What is this game? What is this game? What is this game? And then it came out and people talked about it for like 4 days. And then honestly,
that statement you made in this version, this 2021, like, yeah. I'm pretty sure like it was commentary on the industry, but also as a joke. But honestly, I heard that. I was like, you know, that's actually true. So
yeah, I mean, I'm commenting on real shit, right? Like, so I watched Death Stranding and I was like, so people are going to talk about Death Stranding literally forever, right? Because they talked about it for like 3 years or 2.5 years and they wouldn't shut the fuck up. Every day was new Death Stranding information. Then Death Stranding, the actual thing you can actually own, came out. And then people kind of, you know, who gives a shit?
They moved on to the next thing.
Yeah, people argued for a year and a half extra time about The Last of Us Part 2. And listen, let's not get into the big ontological debate about what's good and bad about The Last. Who gives a shit? I give a shit personally, but you know, that's a big it's a subjective argument. What I want to get to is everybody talked about The Last of Us Part 2 and we're so pissed that it didn't come out on time, and then, oh my god, a global pandemic is an excuse to not release a thing? Are you kidding me? And people freaked the fuck out. Then finally they released the game, and then the next week it's, you know,
no one cares.
Bros. Who gives
a
shit?
No one cared.
And I was just blown away by this. So we thought, wouldn't it be cool to just have a character who all she does is announce everything. All she does is announce some shit. And then by the end of it, as you're hearing now, I'm very worked up about it. I had Nina do 3 minutes, 9 seconds about, hey guys, why don't you fucking play a game? Why don't you just play a fucking video game? Isn't that what you guys want to do? Play video games? Instead of like all this, I think there's a dystopian future where, do you guys remember Demolition Man? Remember how they would turn on the radio and all of the music, there wasn't any music anymore. It was just jingles for like brands.
Yeah.
It was like Taco Bell ads and fucking dog food ads and stuff. That's, I feel like that's where we're going. Like, I've seen very little about The Last of Us 2 outside of that, the argument about, you know, is it good or not? Is it worth it or not? Like, they ruined Ellie or whatever people want to say. That's, it's all been like a one note argument in a very like siloed specific area. And everybody else just forgot the thing that existed. And they talked constantly about it. They wouldn't shut up about it. I was constantly worried about spoilers because everybody's constantly talking, oh my God, Last of Us, there's a leak. Somebody's read a story. Somebody looked at a billboard and worked out a cipher and figured a thing out. Oh, the moon talked to a guy's brain through tinfoil and told him about The Last of Us Part 2. And then it came out and nobody gave a shit. And I was just like, what the fuck is happening? So yeah, that's kind of the statement we were making. And I was like, wouldn't it be cool to play a game? And then of course, Devolver, the big fucking huge energy there, they decided to release a game that was their marketing. So the joke is, you want to get marketing? Fine. You can have marketing. Just have it in a game though. Like, use WSAD, fucking use a controller, use mouse, keyboard, do whatever you want. Play the marketing because it's too much, guys. Too much of this is fucking marketing. If you're gonna do nothing but consume, we'll give you a free thing you don't have to pay a dollar for that will give you all of the marketing you want. And it's also a really cool game made by Flying Wild Hog, the people who make Shadow Warrior. It's cool. I don't know if you guys played that game yet, the Devolver.
I tried to, but they don't have inverted control support, and that just kills it for me.
I play it inverted as well. I don't know, man. There might be a patch. Who knows? I can't speak to it. I didn't make the game, and I'm not really associated with the making of the game, unfortunately, although I did get to like play early versions of it and make some notes and stuff, but I didn't actually, you know, I don't have any control over that. That's not me.
Did you have any content in the game? Did you guys make anything for in the game?
Nope, not a thing. Not we bad. Actually filmed a bunch of stuff. We were going to have this corridor where there's going to be some film stuff going on in there, but I don't know if you know how games work and how like development works and how advertising works and everything. 9 to 70% of what we do ends up on the cutting room floor. So we definitely filmed a bunch of stuff to go in.
Very specific.
Yeah, it was a specific.
If you couldn't tell, he's got some stats.
Yeah, well, yeah. I live it. This is what I do. I live this constantly. Literally, before this meeting, I got the message saying, "Hey, bro, aren't we going to meet?" I was like, "Dude, I thought you dropped off the face of the planet because we were supposed to meet yesterday." I literally pressed send on. I'm wrapping up a live action project that's going to go live this week. I sent it to my tail end post team, the finishing team, to add a color pass and to finish up sounds on because it's literally all I do. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to wake up and keep doing it. What sucks is this fucking pandemic. Listen, I'm gonna talk about privileged people problems right now. My big problem is during the global pandemic, they closed down Los Angeles for businesses, which means my film company can't film anything because a film company is a group of people and they get together other people. They put all those people in a tiny space and then, you know, they make them act and then sometimes they're spitting and they're, you know, throwing liquid around and there's always haze in the air that carries particulate matter and it's constant everything wrong for a pandemic, right? Yeah. So outside of the, like, I'm worried about my mom in Detroit and I'm worried about my wife's family and I'm worried about all that like constant like pressure from the outside. Also, my film company can't work because you can't shoot a movie during the pandemic. It's not a real thing. Except LA opened up for like 3 weeks and they had all these, we had to have on our set for 2020. We had to have this pandemic. We had to have a COVID officer whose job was only to like make sure everything was appropriately observed. We had digital checkpoints. You had a little device you had to scan in everywhere you went. You could only walk a certain way through the studios. So people wouldn't cross paths. You could only have X number of people in one place at one time and just being monitored. They had video cameras monitoring everything. I literally, at one point I reached toward an actor to move a piece of hair, which was getting in the way. And I heard over the walkie talkie, 6 feet down, 6 feet. And I was like, oh shit. Oh my God. Like, this is real. This is the COVID police, which is great. I'm not denigrating that at all. It just, it made everything 40% harder, to shoot. But that was open for like 3 weeks. Both our governor and our mayor are shutting everything down again. So we had to pack January through July amount of work into 3 weeks.
God damn.
Normally we would do at most 1.5 to, if we're really spinning, 2 projects in a month. And that's if we're like the candle is gone. There's no ends to burn. It's just flames. If we can do
now, here's a question real quick that leads into that. So due to the fact you only had the 3 weeks, I'm assuming at the time, though, you didn't know it would be 3 weeks. It was just like open till further notice. It ended up being 3 weeks.
Correct.
But at the time, was it mainly a matter of let's get what we can get done that needs to have us as a collective, and then hopefully get as much of that done as possible so that if something does happen, we can do the rest of it, like editing and stuff, maybe like in our own personal spaces and just like send files back and forth or whatever.
Yeah, 1 week into the 3 weeks, they were threatening to shut things down. They were going to shut things down. There was the threat to shut things down in the middle of us shooting Devolver Digital 2020, Devolver Direct 2020. Like it was a bad scenario. Like for the first time ever, I had to send a memo to my client saying, if we get shut down by the government, I'm going to have to give you some of your money back. Damn. That's never happened before. Like, that's a crazy scenario. We were worried. We were every morning we woke up. I remember 2 days before shooting, Nigel from Devolver sent me a news clip from the LA Times saying, like, the governor's considering shutting everything down. And I was like, yeah, man, we saw that yesterday. Like, we're on. So we at that point, we, not only did we have to stack everything on top of each other to get done as quickly as possible, we also ran into a scenario where every contractor and every stage and every rental house, they all heard the same news. So everybody's renting everything. Everybody's on top of each other. Everybody's trying to get a thing done. And we had, you know, we had to have police there while we shot to make sure that we were observing all this stuff. There's a guy, there's a walkthrough every couple hours. It's a big, huge, like additional production on top of your production. So we've been running until, I'm not going to be done until, oh shit, I just looked at the date. In my mind, I was going to be done on the 28th, but it's the 28th today and I'm not going to be done until next week. So,
sorry.
There was, you know, we had to pack all this stuff in like no time. And we had to drop two projects because the state is going to close and we can't shoot them. And it's really hard. But so again, I recognize that I am not starving and neither do I have COVID-19 and my wife is fine and she works at Riot Games and they have done an admirable job during the pandemic. I've never seen a company like pull together and service everybody. Like all of a sudden, like, I don't know what I'm allowed to say or what I'm not allowed to say. She doesn't tell me anything secret, unfortunately. I wish I had that kind of pact with my wife, but our marriage contract, it doesn't include like NDA stuff from Riot, so I don't know what's coming out or what they're doing. But I do know that she bought a new desk and she basically had a whole like office outfit within a couple of weeks of the pandemic starting. She's been working, the whole company's been working from home. Everybody's being supported and taken care of and they're given mental health days and they're given all this kind of, it's amazing to see her like world contrary to my world where I am the guy who owns the company and everything's fucking on fire all the time. We're just like running. It doesn't make sense. I know that she's safe. I'm safe. So far, our families are both our collective families, our respective families are safe. So my complaints that like, oh God, I didn't get to make movies as much as I want. I understand that it's not the biggest problem going on in the world right now, but it is a personal stress because
it's still your livelihood.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta understand also like everybody. Yeah, everyone's gonna have their own respective problems. So for someone to come along and say that you can't be upset or concerned about your life because someone else has it worse, that doesn't compute. Like, everyone's got their issues and they're going to talk about it.
And we can fall into a giant like psychological debate about how people who have suffered more over the course of their lives have been shown to be happier with less things, and like people who have everything are all constantly depressed, and like there's just whatever human nature, the human experience. Sure, I get all that, but what I'm trying to say is I'm happy that we got to do it. I'm also terrified because like starting next week, we've got nothing, man. And I can't point a camera at something unless it's in my living room. So that's kind of scary. So all the good stuff happened. We got Devolver Direct out in the nick of time. We're going to release this other thing. This is a live action thing for Devolver. You'll see it this week. And you'll know it's me when you see what it is. You'll be like, ah, yeah, that guy.
That's the guy.
Yeah, we talked to that guy just a few days ago. But literally, I'm wrapping that up, and then after that, we're kind of done until further notice, I guess, until COVID. So unfortunately, my company is a boutique media company. I didn't quit my very, very, very lucrative big data programming job to start a film company because I thought the money would be better, because 0% would that be a thing. So I'm not sitting on a lot of margin, right? Like, we don't come out of these projects with, you know, bank. We come out of these projects with whatever is logical to keep. But I'm also – I have the un I guess totally enviable job. I was going to say unenviable job, but I have the totally enviable job of being the guy who does the business, but also is the creative director and director, which means that at any point I can make a ridiculous decision that fucks our company's bottom line, but makes a cool piece of art, which I have done too many times. I have a producer. at the beginning of this year, I actually took on a partner who kind of runs a company with me now, and she says no a lot to me, which is basically her job. And she does a great job of it because, God, man, if the difference was like me being able to pay rent or me being able to rent a helicopter for a day or two to shoot a thing, that helicopter, man, I'm going to be in it. I'm going to be shooting stuff.
Oh, so, Lord.
I didn't want to interrupt earlier, but you were saying that you know, not being able to create was being problematic. Yeah. And there's a special kind of hell when you're a creative person. Yes.
Absolutely.
Like, you feel it in your bones. You're absolutely like, I need to make this yes now.
Well,
and
I remember
you're legit was being told you can't.
No, totally. Like, we're not being told we can't by, like, a company that has yeah a, you know, it's literally the government
world
says
the world can't says sit your ass down.
Right. Well, what's even worse than that is it's not even worse, but like what plays into what you just said is it's not just the government. I say the government, but there are other governments who haven't said it, and those people are fucking dying.
Yeah.
So, like, Earth is saying, hey, man, I know you basically get a bunch of people together and blow things up and have people talk to each other real close and vomit and throw up and spin around and, you know, flames and whatever else. You can't do any of that. That's not a thing. because you'll all die. How about that? You can just die if you do it. What really sucks is I was pitching this other property, this giant fucking studio. This is not a humble brag, by the way. If you're in this industry for any amount of time, you're constantly pitching giant properties to studios and they're constantly telling you to fuck off and die. So this is not new or special or interesting. It's just that I felt we had a chance with this one, and then COVID, and then that company announced that they're going to tear up their slate for the next 2 years and just not do anything. So of course they're not going to pick up my phone because they're shutting down productions they've had in production. Why would they hear my stupid random I'm a guy who would move to LA to direct films pitch, right? Like, that's not, nobody's gonna listen to me. Which, by the way, is like your life if you're a director. I had somebody tell me once, hey man, you're so lucky you get to make movies. I'm like, dude, what did Hemingway say?
Tell people I want to make a movie and hope it works out.
Right. And it's worked 0.001% of the time. Which still has produced 109 projects. So imagine how much I want to make movies. So I don't know. I say it's Hemingway, but it's probably one of those Abraham Lincoln misattributed quotes. But like, writing is easy. All you need is a typewriter and a gun, right? Like, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I need to make art, and it's hard to do. And if you're a director, I don't want to be a filmmaker. I know a lot of like filmmakers who do like 900 things, and they do the catering and the producing and all this other cool stuff. And those guys are better filmmakers than me, because all I can do is write and direct a thing. But a director's job is 99.9 repeating ad infinitum percent pitching, right? Having the idea or finding the idea and then pitching, or getting a producer to buy an idea and then pitching and pitching and pitching and pitching and pitching. And the infinitesimal amount of time you actually get to make something, you put your entire everything into it. And then you go back to pitching. And what sucks is I was at the end of a 2 year at this point pitching run with this particular franchise. And it looked like there might have been some traction. It could have turned into something. It could have turned into a meager whatever side episodes. Who knows what the fuck it could have been. And then COVID. And it's just this like devastating position. And as you said, just a few seconds ago, you said that, If you need to create, like I'd mentioned, I'd come from a programming background, and I was making mad money. I was a big fat person. I was huge. I weighed like almost 100 more pounds than I weigh today. And I had arcade machines and I had all this stuff. I just was that guy who just like went into work, put my head down, slept under my desk, was stressed out, was drinking 2 liters of Mountain Dew, was just like fucking banging through code constantly. And I was making mad money, and I was so depressed because it didn't mean anything, and the people I knew didn't respect me, and I didn't talk to my mom for like 7 years because I was depressed, and everything was just like garbage. And I realized the problem was I was putting all my creativity into programming some stuff, which, you know, is really good if you're a programmer. If you're a pure programmer and that's what you want to do for a living, creativity is the best thing. Programming is almost as creative in my mind as writing and directing films. It requires just as much push and just as much innovation and just like a million more problem solving in some cases. So big ups to every programmer out there just kicking ass, because you guys fucking, you are doing it. The problem was I needed to tell stories, and though I could solve the problems and be creative and have innovative solutions, what I couldn't do was tell the stories I needed to tell, making, you know, marketing intake web services for a giant database that did data transformations. Like, that's hard to tell, you know, a story in there. And maybe people could do it. I just didn't know how. So I gave it all up to make movies because I was fat and depressed and dying. Like, literally, I went to the doctor and they were like, yeah, dude, you better stop drinking. And I'm like, I've never had a drink in my life. And like, oh, that's crazy, because your liver is about to die. You're going to die.
Whoa.
And I was like, wow. Oh, what's going on? They're like, well,
yeah. And it was from like, stress. And
it was from stress. I was pre-diabetic because I was eating fucking garbage because I wouldn't leave my desk. So whatever the IT guy brought back from Taco Bell, and I was drinking Mountain Dew. Listen, Taco Bell and Mountain Dew are great. I'm not trying to shit on those. Eat those when you can, but like limited.
Well, they're delicious.
Like,
yes.
Be limited if you can. 10% of the time, maybe in your whole life, eat the Taco Bell and Mountain Dew because it's really good. But it's garbage for you if it's all you eat, right? I'm sure everything is.
I like how Joe chugged a Mountain Dew as you were saying that.
Yeah.
Well, dude, look, I've been chugging Mountain Dew today as well. Like, but I went to the doctor and they're like, "You're gonna die, dude. You gotta die." I was like, "What's going on?" And they're like, "On a scale of 1 to 10, how stressed are you at work?" And I was like, "I don't know, 64 factorial. pretty bad." So that was weird. They said, listen, your liver's going to give out, you're pre-diabetic, you're going to die. You got to make a life change. And so I gave it a couple months, and I realized I wasn't happy, man. There's a big long story about looking out a window and all this other crazy shit that I'll probably put in a movie someday. But anyway, I made the decision and I quit, and I realized I was depressed for most of my life. And it was because I wasn't creating. The times I was happiest when I was in high school shooting movies on VHS recorders and cutting them together in my fucking two VCRs plugged together in my mom's living room and stuff. Like, that's when I was happy. I didn't really realize it. I thought, I want to make movies, but, you know, you got to have a house, you got to have a 401k, you got to have this, you got to have a girlfriend, you got to have all this other stuff. You can't just, like, follow your dreams. That's crazy. They say follow your dreams. Be the president, be a firefighter, be an astronaut, be whatever. But really, what you got to do is make sure all the bills are paid on time, and make sure you have a big college debt, and make sure you have a house debt, make sure you have a car debt, make sure you're paying into these debts until you fucking die. And I was like, no. So I got rid of the car. I got rid of the – I was doing a lease to own on a condo. I got rid of that. Got rid of everything. I was like, fuck it. I put everything I had plus a bunch that I got plus a bunch that I had to pay back into a feature film that I made with some really great people who helped me make that movie. We made the movie, and it won fucking a bunch of awards. And people were like, hey, how long have you been making movies? And I was like, oh, shit. I just wasted 12 years not doing my dreams. I should probably do my dreams. And then I spent the last 10 years doing my dreams, and I'm doing the best I can. They're not the best. I'm doing my best. If you like it, what I'm doing, I'm very proud. Thank you. But I got to tell you, no film director, like, I'm sorry, I'm going on a tangent. Let me actually finish up the previous thought. So anyway, follow your dreams. It's a thing you should do, because if you don't, you're gonna be depressed and unhappy and fat, and your liver's gonna give out. So follow your dreams. But anyway, as I was gonna say, any filmmaker out there who tells you that, like, it's him, like the auteur theory, that the guy came up with an idea and shot a movie, this is his movie, look, he thought it all himself, fuck all that. I've seen a couple of those, like, movies where the one guy shoots himself with his own camera in his own room shaving or whatever, and that's like, oh, it's an art piece or whatever, like that music piece that's like 24 minutes of silence, right? You could totally, it's a totally true, a one guy can make a thing. But if you think Goodfellas is a good movie, that's because 200 people work on Goodfellas. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're like, well, Quentin Tarantino, he makes all these great movies. Yeah, of course he does. But he has 235 people making those movies with him, and every single one of them is bleeding for that movie. And every director is a captain of a ship. If you don't have a ship, you can't captain a ship. If you don't have the guys who built the ship, you can't captain the ship. If you don't have the guys who made the logs that went into building the ship, you can't have a fucking ship. You can't captain a ship that doesn't have a fucking cook, or the people who swab the deck, or all the way up to the first officer who's really captaining the ship. Like, you can't make a movie alone. And I can't sit here and tell you about all the stuff I did without pointing out. I don't know if you saw at the end of 2020, we made an 80s song I got with Stemmons, incredible musician. He's the Metroid Metal guy.
Yeah, he was actually on the last episode.
That's awesome.
Our good friend Grant.
Grant's incredible.
Yep, we're gonna play that song at the end of this episode. We've been holding on to it. So
good. I love it. So I wrote that song with Grant. I didn't write the music part. Grant did all that. I'm not a music guy. I definitely wrote a bunch of lyrics. And even the lyrics I didn't write, I technically wrote because he just took lines that I wrote in other DD 2020s. or DD Directs, not DD 2020s, right? Anyway, we made that song because we wanted to put a 4-minute montage at the end where we got to show all the people who worked on this. Not just to like sound cool and be kitschy in 80s or whatever, but because so many people worked so hard this year to get this thing done. We thought every single one of them could have an opportunity to give a thumbs up, right? Because holy shit, guys, it was 40% harder to make this thing. And it's always hard to make in the first place. But we had to say thank you in some way and show, yes, Nigel came up with an idea. I came up with an idea. We worked together. I banged out a script and I directed it. But that's just one of the dudes. There's so many people who bled so much of their soul onto this thing just to get it done. So really, I like to say a phrase. This is one of those things where you can either, if you like me, you're going to be like, oh, that was prophetic and awesome and wonderful and great. Or if you think I'm a piece of shit, you'll just be like, yeah, that's a dumb thing this guy said this one time. But I direct artists, and those artists make movies, right? Yes, I am a quote-unquote filmmaker, but I'm really just a director. I direct. The writing, yeah, that's me. I write that. Those words, those came out of my fucking mouth. You cannot take that away from me. In the moving picture or the moving machine that makes moving pictures, I am the guy that made the words come out of people's mouth. That was me. But also, on the day when I'm directing it or in post-production when I'm directing it, I'm putting everything I've got into it, but that's spreading out over a group of artists who each and every one of them, I'm putting my full time into overseeing 100 jobs, but there's 100 people or more or less, depending on the product, the production, who are each of them themselves concentrating their entire artistic output on one element of that job. Every single one of those people is mad boss. Every single one of those people deserves everything. And you cut out one of them, you delete one of them. I can't make a movie. I'm nobody. I'm just a guy that had an idea this one time with some words. Right? Even the guy who writes the words.
You guys pulled in for that, or every one of them.
Oh, God.
They work. They work.
Yeah, especially that Don guy. You see that Don guy in there?
Oh, God. Stunning. Sexy, too.
Where do you know? We got something.
No. So check it out. The Don thing is funny. It's a cool story. Another exclusive. I haven't told the story yet. In 2018, we hired an actor who was going to come in at the end. We did a stinger after the credits. It shows up and a guy leans in and he does the RoboCop thing where he's like, you know, what are we talking about? Lose the arm and you're going to be one bad motherfucker. And that was going to be the end. And we were going to imply that we were going to do like a cyber Nina for the next year. That was our end of 2018. Except, as happens, sometimes your shoot goes long, right? Well, that actor definitely had to be out of there by X amount of time. And we were an hour late. Everything was running an hour late. So he got into his car and drove away.
No.
At the very, and we're supposed to shoot that shot. And we're like, what the fuck are we going to do? The actor's gone. And, we had to get it. And we were an hour late. So everybody was pissed. The set people were like, we have 1 hour grace, but then we're going to kick you out. And we had to like rush and get it done, which by the way, this is like every film production. This is not a weird thing that happens on a movie set. This is like what happens. If you don't believe me, go read about how many 24-hour
days.
Yeah, like they had to shoot a bunch of 24-hour days on Back to the Future, which is by all accounts an incredible production. So like, I don't know, man. It's movies. So I was like, I don't know what to do, man. I'm looking around. I was like, fuck it. And I took – if you watch 2018, the first guy to come on stage is a guy who gets his neck broken by Nina. He's wearing this sort of gray 80s jacket. We didn't have his size of the 80s jacket. So he never turns around because the jacket's being clipped on. It's like held onto his body. So, but what's cool is that jacket definitely fit my big ass. So I threw the jacket on. I'm like, fuck it, I'll do it. So I did the ending bit with the full idea that in 2019, we would totally redo the ending. We would totally fake it like that's not what happened because that was kind of the theme. So 2019 rolls around and Nigel comes up to me. It's actually the end of 2018, obviously, because we start writing this stuff very early. Nigel comes up to me and he's like, okay, so here's my idea. I want it to be Linda and Zane and Margaret and Don and Nina. And I'm like, wait, what? What? They're like, yeah. I want Don's got this idea that he was going to do the Nina program, but the Nina program is going to be taken over by this new lady. What do you want to call her? I'm like, let's call her Linda Masters. It sounds funny. Cool, Linda. So, I'm like, did you say Don? is going to be in it? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, can we, so we can recast Dot. Well, why? We got you. And I'm like, oh, fuck. So then I had to like be in it. I got notes. People are like, oh, so I see you're putting yourself in your shit now. And I'm like, oh, God, no. I'm the worst actor. I'm not an actor. So I don't know if you noticed, but I only like scream things and like get out of the way in 2018 because it was the worst. And what sucked is the director. I don't know how like Mel Gibson did it or any other actor who directs things. There's probably a way better class of person to talk about than Mel Gibson who directs and acts in things. But my point is there gets a point where, at least for me, I'm a visual director. I am the usher of a 16x9 rectangle, right? Like my job is to make sure everything's going on in my monitor. And I make sure that like I frame up the shot, I compose the shot, and I make sure all the action in the shot takes place. Because in the end, I am basically the matador for a bunch of shapes and colors that have to like represent a thing in your like pattern matching machine that's in your head. So that's really what I spend my time doing, is looking at that rectangle while everything's happening. But when I'm in it, I can't see the fucking rectangle. I am in the rectangle. I don't know what's going on in the rectangle at that point. And then I had this camera move where the camera like does a crescent arc around us, and I know where it's supposed to be at all times in the arc because we demoed it a couple times. So I'm talking. But while I'm talking, I'm watching the camera miss the mark. Every take, it's like going too fast or too slow. And I'm supposed to be delivering lines, and I can't deliver lines because I know the camera's not where it's supposed to fucking be. And my brain is like showing me where the camera is in the rectangle, and I'm like, oh, fuck, it's missing everything. Anyway, my whole point is it sucked, and I thought, cool, let's kill Don off at the end. Or let's have him get – let's have Don get – like he gets ousted by Linda. Linda takes over, and we never see Don again. So that's fine. We get to 2020, and Nigel comes back, and he's like, listen, what if it's Linda – and the whole thing takes place inside of this, like the Matrix. It's like Linda's brain or Nina's brain, but Linda's in total control of it. And I'm like, well, cool. Well, Zane and Margaret are outside of the Matrix. They're like trying to hack in. He's like, yeah. And like Don's in there and he's like her bitch. And I was like, what the fuck? So I don't know. In 2020, I only go like, okay, yeah, ready to go. And then I cut away because I don't want to be in it at all. So it's just like, it's just me like agreeing to stuff. Except I did a thing. If I was going to be in it, side note, I was supposed to die at the end. We were going to, you know, when I come in and I throw I give the thumbs up and Margaret freaks out and, she calls me a motherfucker in slow motion and then mm-hmm. I like leave. The idea was originally she was going to pull out a Mac 10 and just shoot me to death. But also, the thing was supposed to start with a bunch of gun violence. But I don't know if you guys have noticed, gun violence has become very real.
Yes.
Very recently. So we decided very early on to like cut the gun violence completely out. Not because almost completely out. There is the – Linda does have a sniper rifle that she fires to kill a talent agent. But that is because Linda Masters is a garbage person, and we all know that. And you can't – it's also a, you know, high-powered carbine fucking sniper rifle, and she's shooting the talent agent for a monster. So it's very disconnected from reality. But all of the sort of like depictions of gun violence that we had written in, which, you know, I've written a lot of them, we got rid of all of them. I was originally – Margaret was going to shoot me dead, and I was going to die, and then I would never have to be in one ever again.
Until next year.
So here's the thing. Don just leaves. So where's Don? And if you read the credits, in one of the lines of the credits, it's like, wait, so where's Don? It's like, oh, shit. God damn it. But I did a thing. Do you guys remember Rogue One? The movie Rogue One?
Yeah.
Are you guys asleep? Am I still on?
I'm still here.
You're on. I just don't do Star Wars, so I wouldn't have much to contribute.
At the end of Rogue One, they do a thing. Hey, listen. I don't care if you like Star Wars or not. Admiral Raddus is 1, 2, 3 in the place to be the best guy ever. It's basically I like Grand Moff Tarkin and Admiral Raddus. Those are the two characters that I get behind. All other Star Wars characters, I don't give a shit about. So at the end of Rogue One, they had a stinger moment where you see Darth Vader and he comes like he hacks his way through a bunch of people as they're trying to transfer the Death Star plans, right? From down this corridor onto the brigade, the blockade runner that you see at the beginning of Star Wars Episode 4. And the gag is the director wrote himself in as the guy who gets the plans from the other guy through the door that's shutting before they take off, right? So technically, the director of Rogue One is the guy that rescued the Death Star plans and set in motion all of the Star Wars series, which is a great place to put yourself as a director. So I took that in my mind. I was like, how do I do this for this 2020 thing? So of course I'm the guy who who pushes the button that reactivates Nina. And I finally get to have some comeuppance. And as you quoted before, hey, look, look at this. I got something right here. So my point is, yes, we got a bunch of actors. I was one of them, and it sucked because I am not an actor and I'm garbage. But the other people were so fucking incredible. Like I was talking about Mariah Zook, Nina Struthers, her 3-minute 9. You know, that was one take. That was one take.
Really?
We didn't do any other takes. Damn. Yes. We just
did one. I'll admit right now, I'm not even surprised because she's on fire.
She's always on fire. She is up. I describe her to people that I know who want to know like what it's like working with her. I was like, okay, so you're in the Large Hadron Collider and you're creating giant plasma fire by slamming like substantive like universal particles against each other to recreate the heat birth of the universe. That's what it's like working with Mariah Zook. She is a highly focused plasma fire. She's incredible. I said action, and I was looking at a little monitor 6 feet away, because I had to say 6 feet, right? 6 feet away from her, I was looking the other way, and I was just, I could hear her out of the corner. I didn't want to look. I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to give any direction during the move, because fuck, man. I said action, and she just gave it. I don't know if you guys have watched it, if all of you watched it or not, but she goes from humorous to anger to tears to like pleading to like to sexy at the end with this the sexy in the way that Nina Struthers can be sexy, which is kind of like a praying mantis is sexy, like she'll definitely kill you for sure. But it's incredible. She delivered maximum good. And what sucks is I know that if you put an actual gun to my head and said, hey, Don, do that, I could never do that. There's that is an innate power. This person she was born with a talent, but I'm not saying she randomly did that. She works hard, like really hard to make that stuff happen, right? So she has this talent, but that talent's not enough. She spends weeks just like pushing and milling and like chipping away at the marble until you have this perfect statue at the end. And just, we did it in one take and walked away. It was fucking believable. Everybody was there. My script supervisor, I walked out, I looked at her, and she mouthed the word wow at me when I walked her. Because you have to go tell, as a director, you have a script supervisor who makes sure to say all the right words and make sure continuity is making sense. And the director talks to the script supervisor and says, hey, I want to keep that one, or I want to keep the first half of that one and cut it and move on. Da, da, da. So I went out there to say, hey, that's our take. And I turned around and she looks at me in the face and just goes, wow. And I'm like, yeah, okay, we're moving on. So we moved on from there.
Next.
Yeah, it was insane. But I don't want to downplay, because the thing about this year that really amazed me is everybody knew Mariah was going to come guns blazing, right? Because she always does. Mariah, you don't want to stand next to her on stage because you're going to look like an idiot. She's going to own the entire stage by the end and you're going to be a moat. So Adrian, who played Zane, I don't know if you noticed, but he is a subtle dude. He's holding every scene together that he's in. He's this like constant straight man. He's this constant pusher, and it's really wonderful. And of course, Callie, who played Margaret, her energy was off the chain, max level. People said, I've read comments that said, that girl talks too fast. That actor, I wish the actor would slow down. Dude, I'm sorry, bro, but I don't know if you've ever heard me talk before. She's doing me. I told her, this is what your character sounds like. Just go like this, talk, 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 talk. And that's what she does. She delivered every beat that I asked her to deliver. And then, of course, the amenable Lacey Hannon as Linda said shit that I don't know. I wrote it. I don't know if I could pull it off. I had her because, you know, I made up like the Terwilliging bum duffel full of this Shadow Warrior 3 footage and all kinds of weird language that she says, because she doesn't swear, except that she does obviously swear. But she fake swears the whole time. I had to make up a bunch of fake swears and so there's a thing you do when you're an actor or when you're directing an actor. They can hide in the soft or they can take second role. So I'll shoot you. I'll do your close up and then I'll cut to someone else and they'll do a close up and you'll know that I'll use half of your take and half of their take and we'll cut back and forth. So an actor kind of hedges his bets, right? An actor kind of holds on to all of the performance and knows that they need to hit it really hard when they know their face is going to be on screen. Well, I don't know if you noticed this, but we used a technique in Devolver Direct 2020 where we made sure that anytime Linda was on screen, she was always in focus and she was always the center of attention because we were in her megalomaniac world, right? So there's a bunch of subtle tricks in there. Some really heady filmmaking shit. Like we used a bunch of different levels of split focus diopter where we have a lens that's cut in half where you can have somebody in the background in focus like Zane or John is in the background in focus, while Linda is in the foreground also in focus, because Linda can never not be in focus. So my whole point is, every moment she was on screen, it was her feature, even if somebody else was doing all of the talking. So there's a bunch of time where Zane's talking and it's just Linda's face, and Zane is off in the background saying a bunch of heady shit, and Linda has to respond and has to react and has to be 100% on. So you have these two different versions of holy shit hitting it out of the park. You have Mariah Zook, where there's a camera on her face and she's yelling at you that you've just fucking, you've wasted your life watching commercials. And she does that for 3.5 minutes, and it's insane. And by the end, you watch the Twitch streams, and people are crying, and people are, you know, they're clipping it and using it for memes, and they're just going crazy about this because she's, you know, she's a gun firing at your face. But then on the other side of that, you have Lacey Hannon as Linda playing this character who has to be constantly in, even if it's somebody else's turn to talk. So you have other people talking, other people giving this performance, and she's just, she is the focus the entire time. There's this one of my favorite shot in the whole movie that nobody even cares about, I'm sure. We do what's called the walking diopter, which people don't do that anymore. They haven't done it since like the 50s, but I fucking did, and I love it. You have Lacey Hannon is screen right. She is full focused. In the background, you have Don. He is in the screen left, and in the far background, he's also full focused because we're using, as I said, a split focus diopter, which is a piece of glass, which is another lens length that is only half the circumference of a lens. So we actually had it tilted sort of at an angle. So all of Lacey could be in focus, and then Don could be in the background in focus as well. But we do this magical trick where when Lacey walks off the stage, we actually, there's the assistant camera guy slides the diopter off the lens following her, because Zane walks into the scene at the same focal plane as Don, which is physically impossible. If you have somebody in focus 2 feet from the camera and the other guy is in focus, 20 feet from the camera, and then the person who's 2 feet from the camera leaves, the next person to walk into where that person was should be either on the same focal plane or not in focus. But we walked the diopter off in real time, and it was really fun. And the last time I saw that done was in the Andromeda Strain. So anyway, sorry to talk about dumb filmmaker stuff.
No, that's fascinating to listen to.
Yeah, so we had a trick for her for I don't know if you noticed for Margaret, she gets dirtier every shot she's in, she's dirtier. The idea is she's every time we're not with her, she's off doing some kind of like ninja maneuver, because originally the original script had her off doing a bunch of stuff, but we couldn't shoot any of it because of COVID. We had to not go where she was. We had to not go into locations and not, you know, go do ninja stuff. We had a kung fu fight in the original script that we had to cut.
The original cut for this could have been like an hour and a half long.
I was shooting for a feature film, man.
Well, honestly, it was entertaining for how long it was, so it probably would have worked for an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah, but why did we do it? Why would it need to be entertaining? Why don't they just show fucking trailers? It seems like you just show trailers.
Fuck yeah, mate.
40 chest, motherfucker. You've been 40 chest in the face. Triple dimension fucking Fifth Avenue, 4D chess, checkmate, bitch. I don't know what I'm saying, man.
Toffee and chocolate?
Hey, do you remember?
Jesus Christ, for now.
Wait, what movie was that? What movie was that where he ate Fifth Avenue bars? And it was Stargate. Remember in Stargate? David from Stargate. David, what's his name? The guy from that. Ultron! What's his name? Fuck.
Ultron was Transformers, I thought.
No. Ultron from Age of Ultron.
From friggin' Avengers.
The actor. Yeah, what's his name? Anyway, he played David in Stargate. Do you guys remember Stargate? Stargate was like a 2.5 hour advertisement for Fifth Avenue bars. He kept eating Fifth Avenue bars. He fed the giant bantha. He fed it a Fifth Avenue bar. He gave a Fifth Avenue bar from the guy from Zork 2, Return of Zork. It was a whole thing. You guys didn't see that?
I gotta admit, I never saw Stargate.
You never saw Stargate?
No, I'm a horrible person. But you know who's a good person? Root Beer's My Jam is a good person because they just gifted a tier one sub to Dark Mika's on Fire. So thank you, Root Beer.
Big up.
Oh, nice.
Clapping. You should ask me some questions because I'm sure your followers are like, why does this guy keep talking? I told you, don't let me.
I don't know what the hell to ask. I mean, I think you've covered like
everything,
literally.
Oh, wow.
What are you playing?
Oh, right now I'm playing. Okay, so my wife just finished. Well, my wife and I just finished Paper Mario, the Origami King.
How is it?
Damn, that was fast. Was it good? Yeah.
Well, the thing is, okay, so when the last one came out, Color Splash, was it?
Yeah.
I was going through some shit, like some big business shit, some personal shit was going down, and I was super depressed. And my wife, at the time, my girlfriend, she wasn't even my fiance at the time. We played through that game. We kind of like sat down over the course of like 4 or 5 days and just played through Color Splash together. And frankly, I don't think Color Splash is a great game, but it was a big moment for us. We like bonded and it was like really not wonderful. So we just finished DD 2020. And I'm in post-production on these projects, but I took some time off while she would play the meat of the story and I would play like a bunch of the boss battles and stuff. But we just kind of barreled through it in like 3 days. And, I hate the battle mechanic, the big tourney ring battle mechanic. It isn't story relevant. It doesn't really fit anything for me. So it feels like a cool battle mechanic that somebody kind of invented and was like, hey, let's put this in a game. But I feel like your battle mechanic should be representative of the game you're in or the story you're telling, and there was nothing paper or mache or origami about the rotating ring battle mechanic. I'm sure you can make a whole game out of that battle mechanic and it might be fun, but I hated every one of those basic battles. However, the boss battles were really cool because it really expressed the full meat of that battle mechanic, but just the random battles were just kind of like laborious, and there gets to be a point where you can just pay money to like solve the problem. Like pay coin, game coins that you
kind of like in real life.
Yeah, yeah. So we did. We paid all the money, solved all the problems. But it was good. It was fast. But the story was really good, and the storytelling was really incredible. And they did a whole bunch with a lot. If you've read any of the news articles about the game, you find out that Nintendo was pretty restrictive with the developers about what characters and what storylines they could actually tap into.
They can't tweak the characters anymore.
Right. They can't do anything. Right?
And give it an original character.
Yeah, so you gotta like fight a stapler in this game. But the staple has a personality and the hole punch has a personality, and you know, it's all very well done for what they were given. I think it's an achievement. It's way better than the Color Splash. It's definitely worth your time if you can get past the battle mechanic, or if you love the battle mechanic, more power to you. That's great. I'm glad you like the whole game. I liked it. I'm also playing The Last of Us Part 2. I am Team Abby. I'm sorry, guys. I have to say it. I'm 100% Team Abby. I was super into Abby the minute she took it. You got the player at the top of the game. I knew it was going to go somewhere. I'm happy that it did. I don't know how far anybody is in the game.
Just don't spoil it.
I'm not going to spoil shit. I'm not even through the game yet. I started playing the game 2 days before DD 2020, and then I haven't played it since. So 2 days before we shot DD 2020, and I haven't played it since. I've been in post-production. But we played for 2 days. I got to like Seattle Day 2 with Abby. I'm Team Abby, 100%. I think she makes this. I'm not going to spoil. Don't worry. Don't have your hand on the mute button. I'm not going to say anything.
Too late, Abby!
I feel like Abby lends. She acts as a relief to Ellie, because I think it's very easy, especially if you played the first game, to unambiguously become Team Ellie, because Ellie is a character that we were related to, and we did live through her whole story, and we did go through all the stuff with her and Joel, and that was a big fucking deal. And if you're into this storyline, and you're into this universe, and you're into these characters, you by the end of the first one, even with the DLC addenda, you gotta love Ellie, man. You're so totally in. But there's something that I think that Naughty Dog has done with The Last of Us Part 2 that very few creators have the nards to do, which is they said, hey, listen, we told you the story from a perspective. Have you considered perhaps that your perspective was colored by the game that we made you play? Have you considered maybe that we weren't lying? These characters did go through those things, and if you controlled those characters, you would definitely feel for those things. But did you consider maybe that there was another side, and that the other side could be as valid, if not? I hate to say this, your whole stream is going to freak the fuck out. Everybody's going to blow up. That other side might be more valid, maybe, than the side we showed you before. That's big balls. That's big Zagunga's energy, man. That's strong storytelling. That's if all of a sudden you find out the next Star Wars movie has the Empire as the good guys, and spends, you know, a whole trilogy explaining how that one time a bunch of terrorists blew up a giant building or something.
Well, think about it. Like, there's a lot of games. Well, I won't say a lot of games, but there are definitely multiple games that will do that in the form of at least saying, hey, the villain's doing his big expose. Here's right. his motivations for what he's right. doing. You're like, oh, I can relate, but at the end, I'm the hero. So you're going down.
Yeah.
So, but it's that extra element of playing the character, I think, that really drives it home.
Well, I think what's interesting is I haven't finished the game, so I don't know where it could go. So please don't. If you finish the game and you're like, you're an idiot.
Oh, you're further than me, man. Trust me.
Well, I at this point in the game, this is a prophetic. This is a guess. This has nothing to do with reality. I'm not spoiling anything. This is just one guy's opinion. I feel like there is no bad guy in the game. I feel like we're seeing a world in turmoil from two valid perspectives, and both of those perspectives have been pushed to an edge that is dirty and wrong. And I feel like if you can justify what Ellie's doing, but you can't justify what Abby's doing, you're missing part of the story.
It very much relies on gray morality.
Right. It absolutely does. You're totally right. So I'm playing that. There's a bunch of stuff I want to play, but like my slate doesn't even know. I can't even like do anything until the beginning of August because I've got to release all this stuff. And then once that's done, I guess I'll have nothing but time, right? Because
yeah.
I don't have to do yet.
In the meantime, you can anticipate the new releases that are coming soon.
Yeah, totally. Like that Starfield game or that Elder Scrolls 9 game or all the other Todd Howard shit.
Or Bean.
Yeah. What do you guys play? What are you guys into?
Who's first?
Cole, do you want to go?
I'm hopelessly addicted to Ooblets.
No. Oh my god, my wife is like 1, 2, 3 in the place to be totally Ooblets. I walked into her office. I was like, babe, are you done with work yet? Because like I want to hang out and I only have an hour to hang out before the post guys get back to me. And I walk in thinking she's got her head down in Riot stuff. What does she got? Ooblets. She's in Ooblets. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm slaving over a hot editing rig right now. And you're in here fucking playing Ooblets. And she looks me dead in the eyes and says, I don't know if you know this, but Riot Games sanctions playtime per day because we're a game company. And how can we be a good game company if we're not playing games? And I'm like, well, great. Wonderful. Great. Ugh.
Ooblets. I just wait for my husband to go to bed and then I stay up till 4 a.m.
I got 19D chess by my wife. She fucking 19D chess technated.
There's a lot of chess being played tonight.
Yeah.
And none of it's Ooblets. I feel like Ooblets looks cool. I don't know anything about it. So my wife said it's basically it's like Pokemon plus Animal Crossing plus The Sims. Is that right?
My favorite way to describe it is Pokemon and Stardew Valley and My Time at Portia.
Okay,
had a pastel fever dream fueled menage a trois and birthed Ooblets from that fever dream.
Well, who was the dad?
Yeah, and which one of the trois birthed the
thing? All of them.
It was a sausage party. That's the big surprise.
Oh, man. I don't know where the baby came from.
All of them.
Wizard!
The glory of God. That's where the baby came from.
Wizard!
It was immaculate oopception.
I know that oopception. I started... To go back to your original question, I started Doom Eternal, but I played it for like a day and then I had to go to work. So I want to play it. It felt like the finest tuned Doom. Like it felt like Doom it's Concentrate.
You've been slapped upside the head with adrenaline is what it does to you. It's a rush.
Yeah, I love it.
Fantastic shooter, but a garbage platformer.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, any. I feel like unless you're Titanfall 2, you're not going to be a good platformer.
That is
Titanfall. Man, those wall runs and shit.
Come on, man. Titanfall 2 for like a 90-minute game. that campaign was incredible. I was shocked by it. Yeah. So I guess Doom Eternal is on my list. Yeah. I don't know. Look, I'm that guy.
What are your thoughts on the new consoles coming out? Do either one of them have your interest, or are you still on the sidelines?
Remember, guys, I'm Don Thacker. I work with Devolver. I make video content for their game stuff, but I am not Devolver Digital. So if I say stuff pro or against things that Devolver fans are pro or against, that is not Devolver talking.
Devolver's clearly with everybody. I mean, Fall Guys is coming out on PlayStation Plus. I just love that
he's covering his bases so he can say whatever he wants.
Exactly. Like, so here's the thing.
Twitter bio, my opinions are my own kind of shit.
Yeah, exactly right. So here's the trick. You were all talking once. I apologize. Whoever said Devolver is behind everybody, 100%. Devolver is so fucking inclusive and so owning the spaces. I mean, like, there are games that Devolver is doing that are coming out on Stadia. Like, they're premiering on Stadia. Like, we're there with everybody. It's great. Don't make the sound. Stadia is – they're trying to do a thing. It might be garbage, but they're trying, right? So I am team Xbox. I'm sorry to say it. I think the Series X looks fucking incredible, but I'm more interested in the other console they're releasing, which is Game Pass. The Game Pass console, which is...
You just made Joe's night, by the way. I just want to point that out.
This is a record. It took us almost 2 hours to bring up Game Pass.
It hasn't taken us that long. It's been a little over an hour. Don't forget, we started late because I'm a moron.
We've been here a while.
Yeah, so I'm a fan of Game Pass, guys. Game Pass is the way. I was shocked because here's how awesome Game Pass is. One of the things if I'm making a trailer for a game, or if I'm making... I have to get codes for the game, right? From Devolver, for whatever publisher I'm working with, or for whatever dev I'm working with. With Devolver specifically, I haven't had to request any keys to play any of the games that I've done spots for because I fucking have Game Pass. So I have access to the free game. I have access to the game for free because I'm working on it, right? And I just use Game Pass. That's how, if Game Pass is functional for somebody who even gets the game for free, Game Pass is doing something right. And I feel like it is, I would much rather pay my $9 or whatever it is a month. I did the hacking business. Remember when Game Pass, they did some fuckery where if you spent like $200 via some magical clicking and drop down use, you could get Game Pass for like 3 years. I did that. And so I don't have to pay Game Pass again, until like 2022 or something. But, whatever it is, $9 a month, that it's worth it. You don't have to, dude, if you're going to take a month to play through whatever game, maybe you should buy the game. I think otherwise, $9 a month. And if you think about it as a business,
but even still, you have it for longer than a month anyway. So
right, exactly. I think what are their numbers? It's something like 10 million. How many people are on it right now? It's ridiculous. The numbers they just announced it on that stream. But it's like it's in the some giant number of millions. Well, maybe giant. It's in the millions of people spending, you know, $9 a month. That is a way better and way smoother strategy than, hey guys, maybe you will be interested in this one thing for $60 this one time.
Yeah,
like it feels 70, like
they're raising the prices of a lot of games.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like if you can get 50 million people at $9 a month, then you can start putting that money into your studios. You can start putting that money toward developers who deserve it, and indies who need support, and you can start getting better content made. You know why Netflix has made 900 fucking shows and 10 billion movies and shit? It's because everybody's paying $14 a month. So of course they can, you know, do a Will Smith pet project, and they can do another thing. And what you have is this moment where people who want entertainment get a million different versions of entertainment, and they can. So look, I'm in a hit-based industry right now, and that really fucking sucks because my movie, Motivational Growth, for instance, it went to 32 festivals, won 28 awards, 15 best effects, 7 best director. It got all kinds of fucking awards. It was really great. And I have a huge fan base who emails me, who constantly wants, they make their own t-shirts. I'm asked to go to places to talk, but I got to tell you, I have no fans compared to the cheapest, most garbage film out there. I have nobody. I'm talking about it like it's a big deal because it's a big deal to me. But you have to be in the right place and the right time, and you have to know to spend that money to watch my movie. You have to go. You have to find it. The original publisher, the original distributor that I got, fucked us over and used the shitty art that they said was statistically probable to sell the movie, but it doesn't even have my main character on the front of it. And we have to go to the store and buy the, like, take a chance and spend $18 on my movie to watch my movie. And I have to sell X thousand copies of it just to make the money back. Or everybody's paying $14 a month on Netflix. Netflix is throwing money around like it's fucking water, and they're letting artists make art because if they have a trillion pieces of art and a trillion different people paying $14.99 a month, then everybody gets to experience what they want. The artists get to make constant flow of art. I hear people say, well, that's just a Netflix movie. That's a garbage Netflix movie about movies that people are making. But what's weird about that is it's like the thing that guy in that podcast said, or that whatever stream said. Yeah, Netflix is making 1,000 things like a month, and 10 of them might be exactly what you want, and 990 of them might be what you consider trash. But that 990 might be what another person, or 10 of those might be somebody's favorite stuff. And mm-hmm. And what you're doing is you're just giving more entertainment to more people, and you're doing it through this incredible streaming business model. And I think it's the right way to go. And I think if if the developers that I know get a grant from Xbox to release their game exclusively on Game Pass or time exclusive or you know, do a Game Pass run on Game Pass, and they get to make their game, I would rather that than, you know, somebody needing to go scratch and go find $1 million to make their game. Because you do the Kickstarter for $200,000, but then it ends up costing $400,000. Then you have to fulfill the Kickstarter and da-da-da-da. And by the end, and you've done all your marketing, it's $1 million. So you get that whole thing. You have to go scrounge up $1 million as a human being to make your game when Microsoft is throwing around $35 million, you know, every quarter to make games. That's a number I made up. I'm just saying, like, they have the ability to if they want to. I know Epic, because of their digital distribution, is throwing around money like water, for good reasons. They're helping everyone. They're raising the bar. They're stepping into the film industry and they're trying to help filmmakers make movies because really? You can't make, yeah, because fucking COVID. Like, Epic is already in there. They're using, they're pushing their game development tools and assets to filmmakers and stuff. I know that even Unity is stepping in, separate of Epic as well. Unity is stepping up and trying to help game makers and filmmakers make stuff during a time when you can't film stuff. People are stepping in to support artists. And if your complaint is, you know, you'll also get stuff you don't like, you know, who gives a shit? I'd rather 900 movies come out a month and one of them be one that I like than 10 movies come out a month at the movie theater, and I don't like any of them. But only 10 of them were allowed to come through because, you know, Chinese investors made two giant explosion movies because that sells really well in Asia, which it does. And a lot of those movies are fucking incredible. I'm not shitting on that. I'm just saying you're definitely going to get two Chinese-funded, Tencent-funded explosion epics. Then you're going to get the one Oscar bait, you know, My Parents' Parents movie that comes out with old fucking famous people in it. And then you're going to get a bunch of teeny bobber bullshit and some cheap ass horror movies that are all the same. The Ghost Infested My House story. And they're all going to be marketed toward what they think is going to give the best return on their dollar. If it's a $250 million epic or a superhero movie, they're going to expect $200 on every dollar they put into it. If it's a horror movie that costs $50,000, it's a found footage movie or in the Skype movie or whatever, they put $50,000 into it. They're going to expect $1 million out of it. It's all just meant to get this sort of like this hit-based struggle to get the return. Whereas if you've got the coffers, if you've got the bank account, if you're Epic or if you're Microsoft and you invest in the platform, and you can make streaming or digital content availability, you can then start putting money into art and into making games that people won't traditionally love. I thought when Microsoft backed Minecraft, it was a huge statement because yes, Minecraft was ultra popular at the time, but on every metric, Minecraft should not have been popular. It just was. And so they took a risk and they made Minecraft Stories. They made all this other stuff. That's all like, and by the way, I'm not like a Microsoft fanboy. I'm saying this giant megalomaniac, multi-international fucking giga company is also making decisions that are helping artists make stuff. And I think to get back to our original point, which console am I looking forward to? I don't see Sony doing that. I do see a fucking humidifier that I don't know what to do with on my look, dude. I'm that guy. I have all of the consoles. We have two Xbox Ones, one for my wife and one for I. And we have two giant televisions, one on top of the other, and we play multiplayer games together that way. Because literally, dude, all badass. I do is games. And all we do is games and movies. If you come over to our house, it's insane. People are like, dude, you must be rich. You have two 75-inch televisions stacked on top of each other and two Xbox Ones. And I say, yeah, what else do I own, though? I own a couch. And that's it. We don't drink. We don't smoke. We don't go out. We don't fucking do drugs. We don't do anything. I make movies. I watch movies. I play games. And to the best of my ability, I'm making two games right now. And that's literally my entire life. So, yes, of course, every single dollar we've got expendable goes into games and movies, man. And every dollar that I've got that I can put toward making movies, I put toward making movies. So, of course, we have two big televisions, but that's all we got. But my point, though, is I look at my little entertainment center, and I don't know where I'm going to put that humidifier. Like, I don't know where I'm going to stick that weird freaking squished pistachio nut looking.
It looks – it's console. Such a weird looking console.
I got to tell you, I'm afraid to turn on my PS4. I turn it on for Spider-Man, obviously. I turn it on for God of War. I haven't since I've been shooting stuff in the 3 weeks we've had capability of shooting stuff. But when I turn it on, it's specifically for exclusives, which, you know, they have locked down on exclusives. And the hardware is always great. I'm not going to shit on the hardware. I love the controllers. I love the hardware. They're killing it there. Except I hate turning my PlayStation 4 on because the most popular and most played game on any Sony platform is the update game. You know, that 45 minutes you have to wait after you haven't turned your PlayStation on for 2 days. You have to, like, update everything. I dread doing that. I dread the, like, weird menu interface. I don't feel like I'm connected to anybody. I don't know what a trophy is. It's all a giant mess. I'm excited for the exclusives, and if Sony is funding amazing exclusives, I'm 100% behind it. Obviously, I've been playing The Last of Us on the PlayStation 4. But telling me more graphics is not – it's not fucking 1994 anymore. I don't care about the more graphics. I'm sure it's going to look great. I'm sure Gears 5 is going to look fucking incredible on Series X, and I'm sure The Last of Us Part 9, Abby's Ultra Revenge, is going to look really great on the PS5 or whatever, but I don't know if that matters as much anymore. So really the big stride that I'm seeing being made is in that digital content creation and digital content distribution that Xbox is taking a giant step into. Now granted, I'm a little biased. I directed Phil Spencer during the Devolver Direct 2020, right? But I also got to hang out with Shuhei Yoshida, and I gotta tell you, man, Phil Spencer's a guy who knows what he's talking about, and he seems like a guy who could totally run my business, but I want Shuhei Yoshida to be my dad. I want that guy to be my grandpa. I love that guy. He is the most adorable, cutest, most amazing human. So, you know, personalities aside, I've dealt with, you know, either side from a gameplay perspective, from dealing with these people for creative stuff perspective, from all this other whatever. And in the end, what attracts me is I installed Gears Tactics, and I got a message this morning that Gears Tactics will show up on my Xbox when it's available. Yep. It'll just be there. It's fucking incredible. I open up this Xbox app, and all of my games that are on PC, they're like, hey, bro, you want to pick up where you left off here on your PC? Because, yes, my Xbox One is incredible, but my editing rig has two fucking 2080s in it. So
there you go. Yeah,
seems like I'd like to play my Xbox games there, man. That seems like a legit. I'm old school. I'm 41 years old, so I'm like, I'm PC mastery is just because of necessity, man. Like, I was playing computer games before the NES, so I feel like, you know, ASCII Pac-Man's got my back. I feel like the ability to go into my office and take an hour break and pick up where I left off on a game, that's incredible. And I just feel like as a player, on the one hand, and as a game maker on the other hand, I'm being supported by Microsoft's initiative. I'm not going to pretend Microsoft isn't trying to make a boatload of money. Like I said, 10 million people at $9.99 a month is a fucking boatload of money. And if you make that 50 million, you can give up your fucking operating systems at that point. So I feel like they're just making a smart business maneuver that has the trickle down washout effect of helping people make cool shit, which isn't to say they don't support it, because I know that they do. But, you know, bottom line is the bottom line, right? So I feel like it's good for all. It's a so say we all win. I feel like, sorry, I just went on a giant rant. You were like, I'm gonna wrap this up 20 minutes ago, and then I started talking. I apologize,
dude. I love it. I love having you on. We're gonna have to do this again. Definitely, we do have more show that we have to take care of. So yeah. Unfortunately, we have to wrap this up for now.
Hell yeah, man!
Come back, make it sooner than like 3 years from now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you messaged me, and I was like, let's do it, and then we did it. So just message me again.
Sounds good.
Hell yeah.
Don, thank you so much. Where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing? And but I think you guys need to lock down imagosfilms.com because...
Yeah, it's kind of garbage right now. I think it forwards to a Tumblr page or something right now.
No, Imagos Films, I did a Google search and it links to IN, which is an Indian film company. Imagosfilms.in.
I think if you go to Imagos Film, it does that. If you go to Imagos Films with a S, it goes to our Tumblr page.
Oh, nice.
It's even garbage. Better. It's got shit on it from like years ago. We definitely need to update this for sure. I think that's one of my producer that I took on at the beginning of the year. That's one of her tasks, is to get this all updated. But you can definitely find us. We do release things on Facebook. Our Facebook page is active. We tweet a little bit here and there. We kind of have a cobbler's shoes problem where we're busy making media for everybody, so we don't really take care of our media ourselves. So if you have any fans out there who are like, hey, man, I'd love to help out Imagos Films and get their social shit on point,
Only if they say it in that exact manner.
Right. No, they just record what I did, play it back, and they have to say exactly that, and then we'll talk to them. But otherwise, you can find us on Twitter. You can always check out what we're doing. I know we tweet about almost everything we release. But if you see some live action shit that's kind of bonkers, we probably did it. If you look at our history, what we've done, we have a style. So check us out. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm Skinny Tie. That's SKINNMYTIE. I tweet out my cats and stuff. It's great. Nice. You can also check out my wife, who's like way cooler than I am. It's, her name's Lindsay Thacker, nay Lindsay Peck. Her Twitter is Pepper Plays. That's PEHPPERPLAYS, Pepper Plays. She is a program manager at Riot. Don't ask her for Riot points. Apparently she can't give them out, even though I spent a year telling everybody that they should contact her and she could give out Riot points. She can't. But you should probably contact her and ask her if she can anyway. Tell her Don sent you. It'll be great.
That's cool. That won't backfire at all.
Yeah.
Obviously, check out Devolver Digital's stuff. Keep your eyes on Devolver Digital's YouTube channel this week for something that we're about to drop. It's going to be really fun. And it'll show you a little bit of that set life, some behind-the-scenes film stuff going on in there. Keep your eyes out.
Awesome. Sounds good. Don, always a pleasure. Do you have any final words before we let you get going?
Follow your dreams. Don't eat metal.
Don't eat metal.
You don't need to fight for robot rights. Have a good time.
Not even tungsten.
No, don't even try tungsten. It'll be shit and sparks. It'll be gross. Hashtag Team Abby. I don't know. No, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. Guys, fans, audience, thanks for listening. I know I kind of rambled a little bit, but honestly, this is the first time I've talked to anybody outside of my editing suite and my post-production thing for like 2 weeks. And before that, I was just on film. And before that, I was writing stuff for 2 months. So like, this is the most human contact I've had that's not my wife. And my wife is fucking incredible, but also ooblets and shit. So I don't know. Like, thanks for having me on.
Shit.
I really did. I really appreciate it.
Ooblets and shit.
Ooblets and shit, guys.
I feel attacked.
Oh, my Lord. All right, Don, you have yourself a good night, and we'll talk with you later.
Thanks, guys. Talk later. Oh, be sure to play my song. And if you listen to it, at the very end, the last lyrics in that song, if you don't look it up on Lyric Genius or whatever, is Don's a dick. Repeat Don's a dick like 9 times. I wrote that lyric. That's a lyric I wrote. So
I didn't even notice Don's that. I'm going to have to pay attention to that.
Don's a dick. Don's a dick. It's really great. Wop, wop. That's not all I wrote. I wrote the entire fucking song. But also, Don's a Dick is in there, and I did it. Oh, and Grant wrote a bunch of it, too. But he wrote the whole music and orchestrated it, and the Arcadian did the singing. So, yeah, if you want, go buy that song, guys. It's on Bandcamp. It's on iTunes, I think. Also, the entire soundtrack for the DD 2020 universe. We got symphonies and shit in there. Go check it out. John Robert Matz is an incredible composer. He doesn't work on most of the stuff that I do. He's also working on this big film thing I'm doing. It's really awesome, but he is incredible. We released through Materia, the Materia Collective, materia.io, I think. Oh, God, don't tell me if that's wrong. I'm the worst. But the Materia Collective just released the Devolver Digital Cinematic Universe OST. You should go check it out. It's also, if you want, Play the Game, which is the Stemage song. It comes on the OST, or you can buy it alone through Stemage on Bandcamp, also through Materia. I think the link is to Stemage's page, but it is through Materia. Go check that stuff out. Get those songs. We wrote that song with the idea that that it's a real 80s song. We didn't write a fake like Kung Fury style takedown of the 80s. We worked really hard to make a song that felt like it was a real thing. So we hope you like it. Nina lives. Hashtag get down off the podcast. Hashtag
Nina does live. She was in the PS5 conference.
Yeah, she was. See, you could have asked me about that. You didn't have any questions. You could have asked me how we snuck that in. That was some magic. Anyway, talk later. Well, that's for next time.
Yeah, next time. We'll get you on next time. Right. Have a great night, Don.
Bye, guys.
Catch you later, buddy.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Oh, my Lord. That was beautiful.
Yes, it was. That man can talk. But it's all engaging. That's the crazy part.
I wonder if Chris is still in chat, if he's ready to go.
I am going to ask, if possible, let me get mine out of the way, because I'd like to be off by midnight, if possible, so I can wake up for work in the morning. But let's ride this wave as we go.
Cole's got one first, so... But we got to get Chris in here, so let's add him to the call. Let's get him in on the action, dialing him up now.
Oh, hey.
Mr. Chris Taylor, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Just doing good. That's it. Just good.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
That was boring.
Aw. I'm ready to kick some tires and light some fires.
Kick some
with tire fires?
I have no idea where I. That's from a video game, I think. I can't remember what though.
Kick some tires, light some fires. That's what we're trying to pull.
Ding.
Oh. Yeah, I was just sitting here listening to the interview.
What did you think? Did you have fun? I tried getting you on there, but you were like, no.
Well, yeah, I had to go to the old house from which we moved and clear up some trash and stuff, so I didn't get here in time to
jump into any opportunity. Had to go to the old house place.
Pernell, are you just going to sing now?
Maybe I will. Making up words as I say my swill. That's my swinging voice, baby.
Should we just get to the reviews? Because it's been a long one already. We have a lot of games to talk about. Should we dive into these?
Yes, sir.
All right. First game to talk about is called Made of Skur, developed and published by Wales Interactive, released July 28th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $24.99. Made of Skur is a first-person survival horror set in a remote hotel with a gory and macabre history from British folklore. Brave the nightmares of the quiet ones. Do not panic. Don't even breathe. Cole, this sounds exactly like the kind of game you're just dying to get.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's good, because I was dying to get it, and then I died while I was in it.
Nice.
A lot. So, Made of Skur is a first-person horror game, clearly. And you play as a young man who has fallen in love with a lady named Elizabeth. And Elizabeth, her family is not thrilled with the idea of your impending betrothal to this poor fellow, right? So they lock Elizabeth away in the attic. This is actually based on a true story. This true story has kind of evolved into like a folklore that's really common in South Wales, which is where Wales Interactive is. So all of this comes together and makes perfect sense. A few things to take into consideration, though, is that the game, Wales Interactive got in a little bit of hot water because they actually used the house, the real life house in some of their promo.
Really?
And that was a no-no.
Wow.
So they got in a little bit of trouble with that. If you think you're going to see the actual scare house in the game, no. This takes place in a hotel instead. So it follows along the lines of the matriarch of this family had an incredible singing voice, and people would travel far and wide to see performances by the Maid of Skur. Okay?
Okay.
But then she passes, because that's what mortals do. And it's discovered that the daughter Elizabeth has a voice maybe even better than her mother's. Just absolutely stunning. So when it all boils down to, she is going to, you know, marry the poor man that you play as, the family just goes, no, we can't let her get whisked away. She's the only thing that's going to keep this hotel up and running. And so they lock her in the attic. She reaches out to Thomas and tells him, you can't just come get me. Everybody here's lost their minds. I'm locked away. Shit's gone crazy. And she sends him a locket with a song in it. She needs this song backwards and has to play it backwards in order to break this curse that has descended upon Skur House, hotel. Excuse me. So that's where it picks up with you, as you take control of him on the train on his way to Skur in Wales to try and save his beloved. This is where, like, fiction takes over from reality, because apparently the real dude was just like, well, they locked her in the attic, bye, and carried on, and she married somebody else. In the game, however, he goes to save her. And that he is you, and you're going to go save Elizabeth. You get to the Skur Hotel, and immediately there's this horrible barking dog. So you know you're playing a horror game, okay? There's no two ways about it. You're like, bitch, I bought this game. I know it's a horror game. Here I am. You're already on par for what you signed up for. But the game does an incredible job of, like, never letting you know when shit's going to hit the fan. And so I spent an insane amount of time just getting into the hotel because everything had me going, is this when something's going to jump out at me? Is this when I'm going to die? I was gun shy. And so I'm forcing myself to, like, walk around. And I'd seen the trailers. I'd read a little bit about the game. I was aware that the monsters in the game were, like, you know, sound responsive. There's even aspects of the game where stealth being a big element, you can't even breathe too loud. You have to cover your hands, put your hands over your mouth to muffle your breath, or they will hear you and come kill you. So I was like, I know that this is a thing. And yet there's an achievement for playing every fucking instrument in the game.
Why?
And so immediately, like, I come across a piano, and I'm looking at it going, do I want the achievement, or do I want to beat the game and not die? I was so gun-shy. And then every time I come across an instrument, I stood there and looked at it like, is this achievement worth it? That?
Yes. Yes, it is.
It was. It is, because there's only two instruments and you see them before anything happens. And I didn't know. And, like, so I would sit there and I'd stare at it and I'd, like, you know, with trepidation, I would finally push the button and play the instrument and nothing had happened. And I'd be like, what was I scared for? And then I get to the next one and I'm sitting there like, good 15, 20. I'm like, this is the moment the game's going to kill me. And then I give up and I push the button and the achievement popped and I was like, there were only two. I felt punked. But it's such a silly thing, but it gave me so much fear of even just interacting with something in this house.
It was only two for the achievement?
There's only two, and they're right away, early in the game.
This achievement guide brought to you by the SML Podcast. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
And I was like, I was so scared to do it, though. But that's a good mark of a horror game. If you're like, man, I am in this horror game, and I know that things were going to kill me based on sound to the point that I can't even breathe. But hey, let me press the button on this organ in the middle of a giant hotel. Fuck it, why not? I spent so much time panicking over that fucking organ. Was it worth it? But that's kind of a testament to how good the horror element of Made of Scare is, that I was just so panicky over something so minor as pushing a key, you know? That everything about the game just oozes the ambiance and the tension of a good horror game. Now, I will say, because I've read about this game, and I read some reviews from some other people, and one thing that a lot of people have said about Made of Scare was that it kind of felt like just any horror game. Right? And on one hand, I could say, yeah, it's a horror game that doesn't, like, break any conventions. Like, there's the stealth element, shit's gonna come chasing after you if you breathe too loud. Literally breathe too loud. You know, and I can understand the complaint, but at the same time, I think there's not necessarily a negative involved here. Sometimes when I play horror games, I want one that's going to kind of shake things up a little and make me contemplate my situation. But there are also times where there's value in the comfort of just going in and knowing what to do. And that's kind of how I felt about Made of Scare, is that I didn't feel like I didn't need it to shake anything up to still be invested in it. I knew what was going to happen. Make noise, shit chases me. But at the same time, I was still invested in seeing it play through. And I'm guilty of using the I want shit to be shook, you know, break the genre, do something different. I say it from time to time too. But there's also, like I said, that there's comfort and familiarity. And I feel like Maid of Scare kind of falls into that a little, where, you know, yeah, you may find it's a little too samey of every other horror game. I would compare it particularly to the first Outlast. But at the same time, I don't think there's such a flood of games like that to the market right now that it feels overbearing. Like, you don't feel like every horror game is this. There's comfort in it, and it's not like, oh, I played 10 of these last week kind of familiarity, to where it bogs you down. If it were released at a time where, like, if it had released with Outlast, I'd be like, well, shit, here's another, you know, but because it's out here on its own, it's been a while since we've had, I think Psychologic 2 might have been the most recent one I played that kind of fell into this genre of stealthy horror. There's not an abundance of jump scares or anything like that. It's literally just, you know, it's a shit situation, and so you kind of scare yourself more than the game. But I don't know. I'm rambling over it, but I had a good time with it, despite where people may say it's not genre breaking in any way. Doesn't always have to. Sometimes you can just have fun for what it is, and I think that's the best way to go into Maid of Scare is just gonna say, I know it's supposed to be a horror. I know it's not gonna, like, tear down the set or anything. It's just, I'm gonna appreciate it for what it is. That's the best way to go about this one.
And it's only a $25 game.
It is. I will say, I don't know why they went the silent protagonist route. There's a couple of dialogue options for Thomas, but like, you literally have Elizabeth, like, screaming and singing at the top of her lungs in your head, and like, you feel an urgency to go and help her, and yet Thomas is just kind of a bag of potatoes. He has no personality. No, she might have been better off staying in that attic than marrying him. I don't know. But that was probably really my only complaint. That motherfucker, like, can't... He's so unasked to actually do this rescue mission that he fucking trips over a pebble because he won't lift his leg up. You're just like, oh. If I had to complain about anything in the game, it's the wet noodle of a protagonist than anything else.
Well, $25 on it. What's your verdict?
I think it's very solid. I easily give it a buy it for horror fans. If you're... Stealth is kind of a tough genre to deal with, and it doesn't suit everybody. So if you already know that you don't like stealth, then take that into consideration. I will say, though, there are 3 difficulties. And so if, like, you're concerned about it being rough or repetitive, then you can very much just set it down to easy. And it's like, here's all the ammo. Here's extra save points. It does not give a fuck. It's just like, you're fine.
Works for
me. And you can just explore it and not worry that you're, you know, going to get your... You don't have to be gun-shy. I set it to easy and I was still gun-shy. Something's going to chase me. But yeah, I had a really good time with it. I think it justifies the price.
Cool. All right. Next game to talk about is called One Dog Story, developed and published by Big Way Games, released July 13th on Xbox One for $14.99. One Dog Story is an engaging pixel adventure game with RPG elements, gameplay that'll get you hooked for hours. You wake up in an underground laboratory, free again after a horrific accident. Prepare to explore this expansive game world and its many secrets and mysteries. Ernell, tell us about One Dog Story.
Well, I can definitely say from hearing that the RPG elements, I don't know where the heck those are, but the game itself I can talk about. So the idea here is that you wake up from a capsule unexpectedly as a humanoid dog person, and you are communicating with an AI that for some reason is able to communicate directly with you, directly to your mind. And is this
I don't want to call him unlikely duo because it's a sci-fi-esque game, so it's not a very unlikely duo at all. It's a likely duo. They are tasked with traversing this underground lab, trying to figure out what's going on within the lab, and ultimately get out of it. So the way this game plays is it's a 2D side-scroller with adventure elements, and since that, it's like interconnected rooms and such. And you go from room to room, attacking or battling against the lab's, I guess, denizens, let's call them. So things like weird jelly monsters or flying insects or some particularly creepy enemies that scream and chase after you and then blow up and then some. There's more enemies too, but I'm not going to go on all that.
Whoa, that's a sniff.
You okay?
I'm okay. Just probably still remnants from those 2X spicy noodles. So the idea here is that you're running around battling with enemies, and early on you end up getting a melee weapon, which is a baseball bat, but as you progress the game you occasionally come across new firearms that you can wield and then switch between using the left and right trigger buttons. Some of the guns have infinite ammo. The melee bat definitely has infinite ammo, surprise surprise. But some of the guns have ammo where you can get actually refills by killing enemies and they'll drop bullets, and then other weapons will have infinite ammo, but have cooldown periods where, like, if you overfire the gun, it'll overheat, and you have to wait for it to cool down before you can fire it again. In addition to that, every once in a while, when you fight and kill an enemy, or sometimes find a secret room which you can find by surprise, using your woofer sniffer to sniff out secrets. Like, you literally press a button, he sniffs, and if there's a secret room nearby, it'll kind of like color the wall a different shade, and you can kind of whack it with a bat and then reveal what's behind it. But these are like special power-up augmentations. There's one special power-up per type of weapon, and you pretty much know what it's going to affect because the icon is very specific. But you find that power-up, and then it provides that weapon with a boost ability. So let's just say, for example, the first gun you get fires a short distance by default. And it's not too powerful. It's just something to say, hey, I got a distance armament. When we get the power-up ability for it, it gets, like 20 shots, where those 20 shots will allow you to shoot all the way across the screen, and the bullets do more damage. So you'll get stuff like that, and you'll find yourself probably switching between weapons with the intent being to maintain power-up gunshots if you want to, though it's not truly necessary. I'm the type of guy that just hoards things in games, so yeah, I did that. So you progress through the game. Every once in a while you'll come across computers or lockers that will provide, like, you know, the general end game like dialogue saying, like, you know the type of game, like adventure game, like, hey, Jim said the password to this room is 556, don't tell anybody. You'll come across stuff like that on computers and lockers. You'll also occasionally find storage crates that will provide you with, like, items specifically for, like, puzzles. Like, you might find a fuse in a box, which you can then take to a computer terminal and throw it in there so you can activate an elevator to get out of a section. Now, worth commenting on, because I don't think I said it yet in this episode, even though it has, like, an adventure-y feel to it as you're exploring the lab, don't think of this as something akin to, like, a Metroid game or even, like, an old Out Buddy game I reviewed a little ways back. They're basically broken up by stages. Like, you're progressing through an area, you're looking for stuff, and the only, like, bonusy thing you can find as you're exploring is, like, these occasional collectibles that are just, like, things you can literally collect, usually referencing other video games like Undertale or Half-Life 2 or whatever, but you find them and it's going to an inventory, but aside from that, that's what they do. But then eventually you get to the end, you might fight a boss at the end of the area. And then when you beat them, you move on to the next zone, in which case you're then locked out of the previous zone. You get a new title reflecting on the fact that you're in, like, a new zone or chapter, and the game progresses. Now, don't get me wrong, this doesn't make the game worse or bad or anything, but coming into it thinking it was going to be like a Metroid-y adventure-y style game where you're looking around getting upgrades and power-ups and stuff, it started as a disappointment, but as I played more of it, I stopped caring, and I think it might be better for people if they go into this game with that in mind, too. Like, just know in advance, this is not a Metroid game. You're just progressing through areas.
So just temper your expectations.
Exactly. And that's not to say that you don't get upgrades for mobility, like general example, I'm not going to say everything, but you do get, like, for example, double jump boots, so you can do double jumps, which will then change the way you progress through the game's platforming zones, because then once you get those boots, the areas are going to incorporate the ability to double jump. So now you're going to reflect, you have to utilize that. So those are things worth keeping in mind. Honestly, I found myself enjoying the game. The dialogue could be better, but it's not bad either. Like, it's enough to make me go, hey, I wonder what's going on with my little doggy friend. And every once in a while, he'll, like, pass out and have a flashback, which gives you a little bit of context on, like, who he is and what he's doing there and whatnot. So you get to look forward to seeing that kind of stuff. The only real technical issue I came across with this game, and hopefully it doesn't, I mean, whether or not it can impact gameplay as a whole or not, I don't know. Thankfully, it did not happen to me, but as far as just general what the hell's going on, it did, which is that you'll be moving around, killing enemies and stuff, and if it's a particularly large area, you might find yourself getting to the end of a zone and then saying, you know, I forgot, so I want to backtrack. So you end up turning back and jumping back down to a pit or whatever to get back to something. If you do that, you might be shocked to see enemies that you thought you killed on the screen again. Like, they're alive all over again. However, they are not alive. Just for some reason, the game felt compelled to reload the image of an enemy that was located in a space before, but it's just the image of the monster. It doesn't hurt you. It doesn't move. And it's just kind of there. So it's like, it's almost like it lacks some sense of permanence and rendering the environment. So something to be aware of. And hopefully it doesn't end up impacting anything. But as far as like getting items and, you know, using them and then moving on, I had no issues with that. So that's a good thing. But something worth warning about in advance. So as far as this game goes, I would, well, you should do your thing.
Well, all right. $15. What's your verdict?
I would say this game is a solid try. If it's on sale of some sort, it's a buy it, because again, aside from like that temper your expectations bit, I had fun with this game and I honestly don't really have any issues there. Cool. Oh, one last thing to mention though, because I totally should have said this sooner. Melee works, but, you'll be relying on guns more if you can help it, because the enemy collision, if you're fighting a guy that takes multiple hits, can get a little weird. But otherwise, it's not a killer. I got a gun and I'm going to shoot it.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Steam Tactics, developed by Igor Rashkev, published by Sometimes You. This one is releasing August 5th on Xbox, Switch, PS4, and Vita for $9.99. The king is gravely ill. The queen wishes you to employ your services. You are one of the most renowned mercenary tacticians in the land. Would you answer the kingdom's call? Ernell, did you answer the call?
I kind of did, though at first when I booted the game, I didn't realize that I wasn't one of the cool animals. I'm some guy.
Aww.
But it's okay because I like cool animals. So if I don't have to portray one of them, that just means that they can all have their own personality, which is cool by me. So as Joe said, you are a tactician that is brought on to help this band of merry animals fulfill the queen's order, which they convey as you play further into the game. Well, you know, like, I'm doing the queen's work. And people are like, no, you're not. And he's like, screw you, buddy. So how are you born about doing the queen's work? So this game is pretty much like a light tactical adventure game. And by that, it's that each animal you get, you start the game with two, but you end up meeting more as you progress. Each animal pilots a ship, and that ship can be outfitted with a variety of different guns. They each start with one gun. The guns come in a variety of different types. Machine guns, cannonballs, flamethrowers, Tesla guns, for example. There's a few other ones, too, but I'm not going to go through the whole list. And each one of those guns has a different range and firing direction. So what I mean by that is, like, you might get a machine gun that can fire in a cross pattern. So two spaces up, two spaces down, one space right and one space left. Not to be confused with one and two spaces right. I mean only two spaces right. So if the enemy gets past that spot, well, there you are. That sucks. Other machine gun might be in a X pattern. Two spaces core up left, two spaces up right, you know, so on and so forth. So what ends up happening is you equip these guns, and on each stage, Your opposition will spawn on one side of the map and you'll spawn on another. Though sometimes they'll mix it up a bit and they might be like one of your guys on the top and two of your guys at the bottom. But it's, or things like that. But it's always one screen with maybe, just hypothetically, because I didn't count the squares like I should have. Let's say it's like a 12 by 12 grid or a 10 by 10 grid. And that's how every level is. You might find some levels where there might be some floating debris out there, which will make it so that this tile that's impassable or something like that. But for the most part, it's always that. Your levels will never scroll. And then on each turn, the units will move a certain number of spaces. Movement is hampered if you equip more than one gun at a time. So basically, the more guns you equip on a ship, of which they can equip up to three, the less spaces your ship can move per turn. You get to a location. If you can fire your gun at the opponent, you can basically choose the gun that is connected or able to hit the opponent, choose the fire, it will attack. And depending on the power of the gun compared to the resistances that the ship opposing ship has, that determines how much damage you can do. Now, of course, if the enemy has a weapon that is also puts you within firing range, they will retaliate and return fire and do damage to you. So part of the strategy in this game is checking the firing range of a ship based on the weapons it's got equipped, placing your ship in a position that can fire on it, but making sure that it has no weapons that can fire back at you from where you're positioned at. So it has a little bit of strategic value to that by trying to play it off. Though as you get further in the game and the other enemies start having like multiple guns on them, that becomes harder and harder to do. Now, this is pretty much the general state of the game. You go into a battle, you fight these guys. If you succeed and win, the battle's over, and you'll get the spoils. Spoils being usually money or parts, sometimes a new gun, sometimes a new pilot. Once you've done that, eventually, very early in the game, mind you, you come across a workshop. At that workshop, you can spend your money and using the resource that you've got to upgrade your ship and upgrade your guns. Upgrading those things can increase the firing damage that they can provide. In the form of the ship, it increases the amount that it weighs and the amount of hit points it has available to it. I guess the weight affects the movement based on number of guns you have equipped, but I sucked at figuring that out. I just put guns on it and said, screw it, figure it out. So you can spend your resources on that to upgrade the guns and things of that nature. There's also a shop that you come across, which allows you to buy items that can be used towards upgrading your ship. So if you don't have enough resources from winning battles, you can just spend gold at the shop to get those resources directly to upgrade your ship. Every stage also has multiple difficulties you can engage. Difficulties basically being determined by enemy level, quote unquote. So you can always redo stages that you've already beaten to get reduced rewards, or you can redo stages but at a higher difficulty than you beat the previous time to get better rewards, so long as you can win against the harsher conditions. Also, the pilots themselves get experience points after each battle, and if they level up, you can spend skill points on one of four categories. The primary category allows you to boost your hit points on the ship. One skill point equals 5 hit points. The other three, however, are a little different. They focus solely on attack damage with specific guns and then avoiding critical damage from those same guns. But the way they do it is that for each one of the stats, it will be the primary buff for two types of weapons. It'll be the secondary buff for two types of weapons. So, just for example, because I don't even remember, let's just say Wit, because Wit is one of the stats, but I don't remember which of the weapons it buffs up. Wit would boost Tesla gun damage and machine gun damage as the primary, and it would be the secondary booster for cannonballs and flamethrowers. So your idea then will be to level up your pilots based on the types of guns you expect them to use, coupled, of course, with the hit points to keep their hit points buffed up, and then go from there. If you need to reset your skill points, you can drop some money at the merchant to buy it was like skill points or piloting for dummies. I can't remember which of the two it's called, but it's always for dummies. You can spend that book to reset your skill points and spend again. Difficulty wise, how difficult is this game? Well, honestly, not very. And the reason being is because you can grind indefinitely.
That's good.
If you find yourself stuck, just go grind some experience. Find yourself stuck, grind for some parts and money to upgrade your gear. You're never truly stuck. I mean, that isn't to say that you can't enter a battle and just flub at it, but I'm going to say at this point, I feel like this game is accessible enough that generally a player is going to be able to beat their head against the wall, boost their stats until they eventually get it right, if that's what ends up happening. So I don't think the game really counts as all that difficult. Now, of course, that's not to say you can't make it more difficult in a sense by beating a stage with the lowest possible stats possible so that you don't have to grind as much. But, why not? Just do it. It's not going to hurt you. So, honestly, that is generally the game. You get into a battle, you win the battle, get new money and parts, upgrade your ships, upgrade your pilots, do it again, 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 as you get new pilots from certain story elements, and then doing the same with those guys until you get to the end of the map. And then you go to the next chapter and do it all over again.
But sounds good.
It is a good game. Like, I honestly think, especially for the price that you pay for it, it's pretty straightforward and simple, but it provides enough for you to find a sense of enjoyment from what you're playing. Like, if anything, the only thing that sucks is that I wish the music changed more between the battles, but though the track itself is good, it's like the only battle track. So you're like, oh, okay, I get it, in the sky, woo. But I enjoyed my time with it. I enjoy the cool animal people. And I enjoy blowing up planes.
Well, then for $10, what do you say?
I'd say it's a genuine bite. If you're looking for a new strategy game that isn't too taxing on the mind, just more like have fun and pop in, I think this is a solid bet.
Cool. Works for me.
I hope so. Otherwise, it's got a glitch or a flaw, and you got to get it checked out.
Yeah, I do. I have problems. What am I going to do?
Not buy that game with a glitch.
No, we'll buy the next one, though, because the next one is called Epic Word Search Collection 2, developed and published by Lightwood Games. It released July 21st on PS4 and Vita, July 23rd on the Switch for $7.99. Epic Word Search puzzles are enormous. There are more than 1,500 words hidden in each massive scrollable grid. Purnell, tell us about Epic Word Search Collection 2.
This will easily be the fastest review I've ever done on this show.
Mine was fast when I did the first one.
I might be able to top it. Let's see. This is an easy one. You are doing word search puzzles. What's a word search puzzle? You have a bunch of letters slapped onto a grid. Some of those letters spell words when read in a specific direction. Your job is to find that word and circle it. Now take that, put it into a video game. Slap it together in the form of four different puzzles, and each of those puzzles being 4x4 grids, of each one being its own puzzle, but also overlapping in a sense. And you got a lot of crossword puzzles in a digital world. So, of those four giant puzzles, they come in four themes: rock, summer, monster, and America. And as you can probably guess, all the words on each respective puzzle fits into one of those themes specifically. Now, when you boot the thing up, the game will start in the upper left quadrant of the 4x4 puzzle grid, and as you look for words, you can press the button to highlight them, i.e. circle them, and take credit for getting them. As you scroll across and start to overlap onto the next grid, the words from that grid will appear on your available words list, so as if to say, now that you're in this territory, these are the words you should be looking for. That is not to say that sometimes the words cannot cross between the two grids, so you might find, I don't know, Stone Temple Pilots going across two grids. Keep your eyes peeled. And essentially, that is, believe it or not, the entire game. You do that for 4x4 grids across four different zones, looking for words, circling them, being done. The music in this game is, what's that that term I'm thinking for, where it's like basically it's like public domain. That's the thing, that's what it is. Public domain music, classical music. So you boot the game up, and it's going to be like a cycle of classical music that's going to play while you run the game. And it's just kind of meant to, I guess, keep you relaxed while you do word searches, because honestly, that's generally what you're doing when you're doing word search puzzles. You're relaxing. What do I think of the game? Be honest, it's a word search. Like, if you like word search puzzles, this gives you a lot of words to search for across a number of large boards.
Yeah, games like this are kind of self-explanatory.
Exactly. That's why I think it's kind of fun. It's like, this is going to be the quickest review I've done. It's like, it's literally word search puzzles, but it's a lot of content in this word search puzzle. I don't know how many words. I think you said it said 1,500 per is what it was that the yep, detail
1,500 said? Words in each massive scrollable grid, and all of that for only $8.
Yeah. Like, it literally boils down to, like, if you are a fan of word searches, you can't go wrong here. I mean, it saves your progress, so you don't have to worry about, you know, folding a dog ear and a page or anything. I would say, if anything, the only detriment, and it's not really a detriment, it's just a personal thought, is that since the word searches are so huge and they're all pretty much interconnected, it takes you longer to get a sense of completion because you are literally just hitting grid after grid after grid. Though I will at least say that they have a percentage indicator for each section of the full grid. So if you get like 98% of the upper left corner done, the game will at least show you that. So you got that going for you. But ultimately, let's be real, you're going to want to solve the whole damn thing to feel like you finished something. So you'll be at it for a while. It's long, but enjoyable too. So if you like crossword puzzles and you're looking for a little bit of a digital edge, you really can't go wrong with this product.
Sounds good.
It is. It's crosswordy. Maybe I should even call it a fuck it, why not? But I don't know. I feel like I should just say buy because it's a very specific thing.
Yeah, plus buy it's better than a fuck it, why not?
I concur.
Yeah.
In that case, again, let's go with the buy it. If you like word searches, you can't go wrong with this bad boy. Just pick it up.
Good stuff. All right, well, Purnell, we'll let you get going. Thank you for your service here tonight.
Thank you for having me on to be of service tonight. I'm having more difficulty doing that thing where you return the courtesy, but I'm getting better at it. The point is, thanks for having me on. It was a good time, guys.
You have any final words, Purnell?
Be kind to each other. Don't be a shit. And also, eat your fruits and vegetables, kiddies, because if you don't, Candyman will come and get you and ask you to, you know, eat candy. That's bad. So, have a good night.
Your messages confuse me, Purnell.
It's what I'm born to do!
Have yourself a good night, Purnell.
Have a good night, buddy.
Oh, man. All right, Chris, it's your turn. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Just, like, repositioning my microphone, because I keep hearing this, like, and I can't tell if it's, like, because my computer's now on top of my desk, so it's just noise from the computer traveling through the desk, or if it's, like, somebody is listening to, like, the longest song that only has one bass note.
Yes, I'm gonna go with that.
Yeah.
Boom.
Just got some trance going on.
Cole, you're not gonna join in?
Oh. Nope.
You playing Ooblets?
It wouldn't have sounded the same because it's not as bassy. It would have been like, and then that would have just been horrible.
Like a gnat.
Yeah. Everything about me is like a gnat.
So, a friend and I, like, he was trying Earthbound for the first time at my house. And this is like years and years ago. And it was funny because we were sitting there on the couch. I was just, you know, just watching him play and trying not to backseat. And every time the battle theme, the victory theme would come on, it would do that, you know, that da-da-da-da. It would, like, do that low note. And we would both sit there and try to hum that low note. It's just what this is reminding me of. Something like that.
I've spent my whole life trying to imitate low notes.
Yeah, there you go.
My phone. That's my tech. My phone sound when I get email.
Oh, nice.
So if anyone has ever been listening to the show and they heard that in the background, I forgot to silence my phone.
Terrible.
All right, Chris, you ready to talk about some games?
Heck yeah, let's do it.
All right, next game to talk about is called Jizze, the First Case HD, developed by Sake Visual, published by Rattlake Games, released July 21st on PS4, 22nd on Xbox One, 24th on the Switch for $4.99. A teenager with no name and no home wanders from one city to the next, burdened by the weight of his extraordinary ability. When he's accused of murdering a woman that he's never met, he sets out to prove his innocence and find the true killer. The investigation quickly takes a turn for the complicated when a strange voice appears in his head, warning him to watch his step. Chris, tell us about this one.
All right. Well, this is a visual novel from Rattleika, which is
so a visual $4.99. novelty, what's right? your verdict?
Nobody saw that coming.
Nobody's exactly.
Who imagined Brad Lake could publish a visual novel? Oh my god!
Hey, we knew it was coming. I think we reported on it at some point.
Not
when they were like
ruin the bit, Chris.
I know. I was just adding. I was patting us all on the back for being so on top of things.
Clairvoyant.
Yeah. Okay, so it is a visual novel from Radulica, but it is a little bit different, just a slight bit. So it is that kind of thing where, of course, a visual novel, if you're not familiar, is just basically where you read through a story and make choices that affect different parts of the story. And the graphics, of course, are this kind of hand-drawn, anime-inspired look, and typically dialogue, you know, the graphics are little more than just, you know, the background scenes changing and, you know, two characters standing on the left and right of the screen talking to each other, or a character directly in front of you. And, yeah, in that sense, this is exactly the same as everything else. And yeah, the story is about, it's basically what it is. It's a whodunit, done in visual novel form, which actually I hadn't gotten to experience yet, even though I've played quite a few of these visual novels by now. So yeah, this kid arrives at this coffee bar and falls asleep after drinking a triple shot mocha latte, which I'm like, yeah, that's a ton of sugar. Of course you're going to fall asleep way before the caffeine hits you. But that's me speaking as a lifelong caffeine addict. And yeah, you're basically woken up and you go to, like, you know, you're basically, your character decides that he's going to hit up the restroom, and on his way to the men's room, he sees that the women's room's doors open and there's a murdered lady inside. And, yeah, I know. She's been murdered. So here's where things get a little different, is that this kid, who, by the way, through the entire game, his name is Question Marks, which reminded me of that one time I played through Final Fantasy VI where I changed Terra's name back to Question Marks and played through the whole game that way.
You're an asshole.
I wanted a sense of mystery. Anyways, people who have played Final Fantasy VI know what I'm talking about.
Oh, God.
So basically, Question Marks, which is how I'm going to refer to him from now on, because I don't think his name is Jizay or Jizzy or whatever. He literally will not give his name, even when asked by a cop, Question Mark.
I'll just call him Terra.
Yeah, let's call him Terra. So, yeah, Terra has this special power where if he touches a recently dead body, which, like you do, he can actually visualize or actually feel like the death happened as if it were to him. So it's like a blessing slash curse. Like, he can figure out how a person died, but then he gets to actually experience that death. So what he gathers from, you know, touching this dead lady's arm is that, you know, something is fishy because she's been murdered in a restroom. But, you know, what he finds out, you know, even though he walked upon a body that has a stab, like a knife sticking out of her chest, like, the sensation that he gets is one of suffocating. So already he's kind of figured out something that other people don't know. Anyways, so there's an undercover cop, Question Mark, in the cafe who locks the door and calls the police, Question Mark. And while they're on their way, Question Mark, he basically interrogates you and then interrogates the three other people that are in the cafe. So the way the story plays out is that you, for some reason, are given the permission, I suppose, by this detective to kind of conduct your own investigation. Although the one caveat is that you can't go back and touch the dead body again. You don't have access to the murder scene, but everywhere else you can go and investigate things. And so basically it's all about moving between two scenes. There's only two scenes in the whole thing, and talking to four people in total, and learning about them. And of course, you can make decisions that will change their attitude towards you, because one person straight up is accusing you of the murder, and you have to kind of calm them down. And one person is very scared, and you have to like talk them to them about, you know, get them to trust you. And one person appears completely innocent, question mark, you know, things like that.
A lot of question marks in this game.
There's a lot of question marks in this game because it is a whodunit. So it really, you know, basically the way it goes is that you you get dialogue from a person, and then, you know, dialogue choices. And once you scroll through all of them, of course, you can talk to them again, but you immediately are dismissed. And it's all about finding out what to do next after you've exhausted all the other options. So once you've talked to everybody, you like there might not be any dialogue that you can have. And then the thing you want to do is then choose to like examine the room or examine both rooms. Actually, I tell a lie. They're both of the bathrooms are also scenes. So that's technically four scenes in the game. But you spend a lot of time going between the hall where the detective is and the regular the cafe where the coffee bar is. And yeah, so like the only real thing about it is just figuring out like what to do, or, you know, basically just keep hitting options until you run out of them. And then, you know, eventually something will happen. Eventually you'll get to the end and you will have either, you know, unwittingly or on purpose uncovered some clues. And yeah, at some point a voice talks to you about, you know, there's something bigger going on here, man. And you don't know who owns that voice. It could be somebody in the cafe, or it could be somebody from outside. And, you know, eventually you get all the clues together and you, of course, provide your evidence and say who done it. And you're either right or wrong. There's actually, unlike some visual novels, this one does have multiple endings, but only one right answer. Every time. So therefore I'm giving nothing away on purpose as far as like even talking about who the characters are. So, you know, once you figure out who it is, the game will end. And the interesting thing about it is that the entire ending is opening up this game for a sequel or a whole series. In fact, after you beat it, a new option appears in the front menu called Epilogue, where it actually will give you kind of a teaser for what's coming next. So this is the first game in a series, but it is itself a fully contained whodunit style murder mystery.
Nice. Cole, any thoughts on your end?
I mean, it's a visual novel. There's only so many ways they can change, you know?
True.
Yeah.
But I did think that it was interesting that you can move between the different scenes rather than, like, with a lot of them, you carry out the dialogue and then it just carries you on and you don't have any autonomy over where you go in the game, where this one actually lets you choose where you're going, which is nice. It was a nice little change up. It made things a little more complicated because I had to actually think about where I needed to be to find clues to carry on rather than just hitting skip and doing everything autonomously.
Right.
So I had to actually pay a little more attention. The other nice thing is that you can save scum very easily.
Oh, yes.
And you can also just back up and hit left bumper and go back. If you choose an option and you don't like the direction it's going, you can go back and try it again. That's not something you get to do much.
Which is good because the achievements are all based on making basically every decision the game offers to you. Yep. And if once you unlock that decision, but you don't like where the story's going, you can just back up to before you made that decision. And of course, the game has three different skip options in the options menu, as well as a slider for how fast it will auto forward when you choose that. And I guess speaking of options, it has like text speed. It has five different languages. It has independent music and sound sliders, even though there's not a whole lot of sounds in the game. It's mostly just music.
Yeah.
And it also, interestingly, has a master voice volume. That is to say, it turns all the voices like either on or off or however loud you want them. And you can individually toggle each character's voice actor.
Yeah.
So if you just don't like one voice actor, you can just mute that one person.
Huh.
Silence. Yeah. Rather like a visual novels are always ported really well as far as settings go. And I always find them really impressive how many options they give you. But I did think it was funny that you could just mute one voice actor or, yeah. or all of them. But if you just particularly hated one, just check that box and you're fine.
Yeah.
but I always give them props. I mean, it's, they do a really good job of giving you options for, you know, configurations. If you speed read, you can speed it up. If you don't speed read, then you can slow it down. And
there's no options for different kinds of text, so there's no like dyslexic mode or anything. But yeah. I think the graphic, the like actual text is really neutral. But I don't know. It's pretty
inoffensive. It's okay.
Okay. And then past that, you get a sketch gallery and a music room. So as you see and hear more things, they get added to the sketch gallery and music room.
Nice. Yeah. Well, $5. What do you two think?
I think that it is good. Like I said, I have not actually had a whodunit experience in the visual novel format yet. And I actually did find it pretty engaging. So it's pretty well written. I think that it's definitely worth it if you want to go in to a visual novel with a view to have, you know, more visual novels down the road in the same series, which the way the game ends actually is pretty compelling. So I really actually do want to play the next one, too. So mm-hmm. I'd say worth it.
Yeah, I'm good with it. I'm good giving it a buy it. I think it's solid for $5. There's plenty of options. I like that there's the bonus stuff that you can unlock. And I think even if you're not super into visual novels, then it at least justifies a fuck it, why not? At $5, you're like, yeah, it's a good starting point. It's fine. The story, I don't think story is like the most incredible thing I've ever
no, it's funny. I mean, what? Who?
But,
you know,
you know, for a visual novel, that's $5. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Cool. All right, one last PartyCast game to talk about is called Ashina, the Red Witch Prologue, developed by Stranga Games, published by Grab the Games, released June 17th on Steam for free. The full game is slated for a 2021 release and is on Kickstarter right now through August 16th. The story is about Ash, an ordinary girl who takes a journey through a mysterious spirit world filled with strange creatures. Ash must find her way back home before something else finds her. Chris, tell us about it.
Okay, so this is from the creator, the one person dev team that brought us My Big Sister, which I reviewed prior. And
Redbow.
Do what?
Redbow, and I think Just Ignore Them is also Stranger Games.
Okay, I didn't know about Redbow, but I did know about the other two. Okay, so this is, and it's in a similar style. It is basically, so it's like a JRPG in that you walk around and talk to people and discover items and, like, you know, things like that. And, you know, like, it's basic, but it doesn't have, like, a battle system or anything like that. It's basically a point-and-click puzzle game, a simplistic one, but, you know, that's at least for the demo. Maybe it gets super complicated later on. Who knows? I mean, they're still in the Kickstarter. But, you know, like My Big Sister, it's mostly about like running around and talking to everybody and picking up the occasional item and using it. And it is all presented in a very like 16-bit or, you know, 8/16-bit visual style that I find really appealing. The closest thing I can compare it to would be Final Fantasy V, because it also does the exaggerated, like, you know, kind of surprises and things like the eyes go really big and stuff like that. And it's, you know, a little bit comical in that sense. So that always makes me think of, like, you know, Final Fantasy V. And yeah, so basically you are in the demo. You basically kind of learn about the life of Ash, and she has a sister that, you know, lives nearby, and, you know, they're always hanging out and stuff like that. But then she wakes up in the middle of the night. Somebody is in this, like, seems like a kid, looks a little bit like a black mage from Final Fantasy, just kind of a mysterious shadowy figure, is with a hat, is watching her television and cooking food on her stove and burning it and almost burning her apartment down. And when she confronts this kid, then he, like, basically goes away, but also takes her mother's pendant, which is extremely, you know, her and her sister's mother had recently passed and had left them with some various knickknacks, and including a pendant for Ash. So she chases the thing down to get it back, and then ends up in the spirit world, you know, think like Spirited Away or something like that. And she ends up in this world full of yokai, which are, you know, of course, the those fun-loving Japanese ghosts, basically. And so the whole thing is basically trying to get him to give the pendant back, and he's like, well, I've already given it to Muma, who is now asleep, and Muma is going to be asleep for 1,000 years. And you're like, oh crap, well, we need to wake her up. And so you have to basically put together a boombox for this guy. And that involves going around town and, like, you know, helping out people or talking to them or something like that, and getting all these pieces together so that you can wake up Muma, whereupon the game ends. So that's basically what it is. It's, you know, whereas my Big Sister was more of like a horror game, but also was more about like the personalities of the characters involved. Like, it wasn't like just straight up horror. This game is actually less so on horror. Like, there was nothing violent or even like particularly scary in this one. It's, like I said, it's more like just kind of a, you know, it's just talking to ghosts and stuff that live in another world. Like, it's really much more tame, and thus, you know, I think it's a little bit more interesting and adventurous than it is like any kind of tense or, you know, or anything like that. So yeah, I found it really interesting. The sprite art is really, really good. I always appreciate the aesthetic that Stranga puts into his games, and music's good too. It's actually pretty minimal, but it's a lot of like traditional Japanese sounding, like shamisens and things like that. And yeah, basically that's just about it.
Cole, any thoughts? I know this is small because it's just like a little Kickstarter prologue demo.
Mm-hmm. So this is only like a 30 minute or so demo that you can play, and it's free to play on Steam. I definitely recommend you check it out if you have played any of the other games from Stranga Games. Like we mentioned earlier, it was Red Bow and My Big Sister and Just Ignore Them. The guy single-handedly makes these games, and he's kind of an underappreciated horror dev. I don't think he gets near as much love as he deserves. He does a fantastic job on the art. Nishina is no different there than it looks very similar to Red Bow and My Big Sister as far as art style goes. I would say there's probably potential for it to like deviate into more gruesome horror. He doesn't really. Like, there's not going to be big bloody goblins and monsters chasing you, because that's not really the kind of horror that Stranga Games does. It's more psychological, inspired by Korean and Japanese horror. That's probably the same path that I expect Ashina to end up on in the end.
Yeah, probably.
I really enjoy the guy's work, and Ashina, I'm looking forward to it. It's a shame we have to wait until next year for it.
Yeah.
I definitely recommend checking out the Kickstarter and throwing a little support at the guy. He's got 18 days to go left on his Kickstarter, and he's only about a third of the way funded. So he needs a little love. And yeah.
For sure. I guess the only other thing I would add is that dude needs to get a dictionary, because spelling mistakes do abound.
He's Australian.
They did in his Finnish games too, huh?
Yeah, he's Australian, actually.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
but he needs to work on his spelling.
Yeah.
I always wondered too, because I didn't know he was Australian, and I just wondered if like the errors were the result of porting, because Radalika does the console ports for him. Grab the Games publishes for him on Steam, but Radalika does console ports for him, and they're Chinese. And I'm like, I always just assumed that was the reasoning. And playing on PC, I was like, nope, that's not it.
Well, there's no excuse for spelling restaurant R-E-S-T-E-R-A-U-N-T. Which is consistent, by the way. That's not just one misspelling. That's how they spell restaurant in the game.
Fun fact, but it took me until like about 10 years ago to learn how to spell restaurant properly. Like I always spelled it wrong no matter what. And it took me forever to break the habit.
That's why I have autocorrect on my phone.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I guess the first four letters and it's like, oh, did you mean porcupine? Yes, I did. Maybe I didn't, but now I do.
The answer meant pork is always, soup, but okay.
The answer is always porcupine.
Yes. So this is on Kickstarter right now. The cheapest entry point is $15, which will translate to about $11. Is this worth jumping in on and backing it?
Yes,
I'm going to. So yeah, I think so. Cool. I do agree with Cole that this is a developer that definitely needs to get a little more popular because, I mean, the writing is very good. Spelling mistakes aside.
I think that there's, at least as far as like console players go, because he's published by Radaleika, we automatically go, oh, Radaleika is just play it for easy achievements and don't worry about it. But much like Distraint, Stranger Games games kind of just get thrown under the bus in that regard. People see it's a Radaleika game, so it's a cheap, easy completion and either don't fuck with it or only pick it up for the achievements and throw it in their backlog. And I hate to see that, you know, there's not to say anything negative to Radaleika because I've enjoyed a lot of their games, but I hate to see that like achievement community mentality kind of bowls over some of the better developers that they have in there.
Which is a mentality I don't have.
Yeah.
And to be fair, Radaleika is not involved with this game yet.
Not yet. I'm just assuming that we'll do the console port because they typically do for him. That's assumptions on my part. We'll see.
Yep, we'll see.
Which could very well be like, grab the games, does it all over, but, you know.
Yeah, so I would definitely recommend downloading this demo, because at the very least, it's a really good taste of, like, the style that this guy goes for, and then you might be compelled to, like, actually purchase something like My Big Sister or something like that, which I really enjoyed, actually. After I reviewed My Big Sister, I went and bought the Switch port, because I reviewed the PS4 port, so...
Nice.
I do genuinely enjoy this stuff, and so I really think that that I would give it definitely a recommend and, you know, ask you to go check out that Kickstarter.
Which the link is in the show notes, so take a gander down there, hit up the Kickstarter, drop a couple of bucks, and go support indie devs.
Yes.
All right. Well, Chris, that is it with you. We got some more to take care of, so we're going to let you get going. Do you have any final words?
Well, if anybody is interested in my, streaming stuff, which, you know, lie or exaggerate, just follow that. I have actually taken a break from Skyrim, which is my normal. Yeah. Well, I'm just, I decided to like go ahead and take a break to, develop some more builds that are going to be interesting. Cause I only had like one in the chamber and I was like, well, I don't want to run out of ideas here. So I'm going to take a break. Plus I decided to use that time to burn through the two biggest holes in my two biggest gaps in my backlog. And that is, on Saturdays, I'm actually going to play through every Legend of Zelda game.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. I have a sad story that I've only ever beaten the first three, one and two on the NES and then, Link to the Past, because I got cursed by an ancient Nintendo 64 cartridge. I didn't beat Ocarina of Time when it was new, and ever since then, I've never been able to put more than like 2 hours into any Zelda game, despite the fact that I keep buying them. So,
well, here you go. That's
my grand quest, is that I'm going to beat Legend of Zelda. So if you want to help, or, you know, help me out with that on Saturdays, I do... I'm unlike other streamers, I'm not backseating averse. I actually don't mind if people tell me just what to do. And then on Sunday, same thing, but more recently, that is in the last decade, I'm going to be playing through all the Xenoblade Chronicles games, starting with the remake of the first game on Switch. I may roll back around to the actual Wii game, But for sure, I'm going to be playing through Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, then Xenoblade Chronicles X, then either Xenoblade Chronicles 2 or that Torna standalone expansion, just depending on which one I end up doing first. So that's going to take a long time, and that's going to be my weekends on stream from now on. And of course, on Wednesdays, I'm still doing the Lufia series. Thursday is just like random weird RPGs, currently Baten Kaitos, and Fridays are Dragon Quest.
Damn.
Yeah.
So Tuesdays, you're stuck with us.
Yes, Tuesdays, I'm stuck with the SML podcast, a wonderful podcast.
Liar.
Yeah, that's me.
All right, moving on, we got our good friend Tim Ekibis joining us. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm okay. I'm all right.
You sound very timid in that response.
I don't know, man. It's just like my intros have had this like gradual escalation like the past few weeks is stresses of COVID and schools reopening build up and begin to build into a frenzy as we get closer to September when shit hits the fan.
Yeah, Cole, what are you doing with your kids? Have you decided yet?
We're homeschooling.
You're homeschooling?
Just yeah. Straight homeschooling. That's different than like when we talked a couple weeks ago about it.
Well, it's there's two options, and we haven't quite figured out, well, there's three now. There's in-person, which is just stupid as fuck.
Terrible idea.
And then, there's NTI, which is what we do when school is closed anyway. It's old hat. But they recently said that there was going to be an option for a virtual academy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is more independent study, parent-led homeschooling, but you are still considered a student of the public system.
Gotcha.
So, and all of the benefits that entails.
That probably tells me that a lot of people were choosing the home option, I'm thinking.
They did a survey, and it was 41% wanted the at home all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then 30 and some change wanted to do in person all the time.
Maniacs.
And then, why? Yeah, because Trump supporters.
And yeah, there's his approval rating right there.
And then 19% wanted to do a hybrid, so they just got rid of the hybrid. And then they decided, like, now it boils down to the NTI is, like, more in line with the public school option and like, their schedules. But the thing that has me a little hesitant on that is, like, there will be scheduled class times and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I have 3 kids in 4 school systems.
Oh, boy.
I have one in elementary, one in middle, and one that is hybrid high school and college.
Oh, boy.
So I can't do a dedicated schedule type system. We rotate the computers around and are always trying to finagle to make sure everybody has what they need. And if I have to, like, sit down and be like, oh, you know, what happens if number one and number three both need to be in a class and we only have one computer with a webcam. Mm.
They don't have devices to provide.
No.
Yeah, that is one problem.
To point this out, my public school system, 3 years ago, when number one was in middle school, one of the teachers gave the students permission to bring in their own duct tape to repair the textbooks.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
My kids have never had their own textbooks. Every textbook in the class system, class that's there, is shared through all the classes. So, like, most of the classes only have between 5 and 7 books anyway.
Wow.
Jeez. And then they're shared between 2 or 3 kids in each class and across all the classes.
What's wrong with education in America?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is why, like, the virtual academy option is really ideal. Like, it's hard for me because I've been vehemently anti-charter school for a long-ass fucking time, and they haven't given us any details, but when I did a Google search for Kentucky Virtual Academy, There was a brand new website that just went up like 2 days before the announcement. Ish. And I, you know, did some sleuthing because hell hath no fury like a woman with an internet connection. And I did some sleuthing and I like traced it back to a public homeschooling charter school system called K-12. Mm-hmm. But then I was like watching videos on YouTube and these parents are like, oh, we do the K-12 option. And like before school starts, they send us boxes of like all the materials we need and all the textbooks and all the books they're going to read. I'm sitting here going, my kids have never fucking had a textbook. How, what kind of idiot would I be to not choose that?
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And like, they're like, oh, if your child's taking a science class, which, you know, every fucking kid takes a science class, they're like, oh, your kid has a science class that needs a microscope, we send you a microscope. Your child has a class that sends an art class, we'll send you pastels and canvases and paintbrushes and oh, your child has a music class, we'll send you a musical instrument. And, oh, your child has you know, math class, we send manipulatives and calculators.
We'll send you an abacus.
You know, but like it's my kids don't have that shit in school here in public school. Like,
no. We have gotten so far off the topic of video games,
I'm sorry, it's not even funny.
But that's what happens when you bring parents on the show.
Yeah. But, like, it just seems like a no-brainer. But they said they were sending out contracts sometime at the beginning of August. We've already been pushed back our start date for 3 weeks. So we went from being, I think the 3rd was our original start date. Yeah. The 3rd was our original start date. They pushed us back to the 26th so far, and they may end up pushing it back further. But they did say at the beginning of August, they were going to send out parent school contracts, and it would have more information. But basically, like, everything I know is just what I've Googled and tried to just deduce for myself. Beyond one is parent-led, one is school-led. And so I don't know, you know, I may end up being stuck and having to choose the other one, even if it poses a problem, or I may have to split and choose one option for one kid, one option for another, because I don't know how it'll affect, number one, with taking her college classes, and I don't know how it'll affect, you know, what if shit straightens out and she wants to go to prom this year? And then she's on, you know, part of the virtual academy. Does she get to go to prom with all their friends that she's known for the last 11 years? Or is she just out of luck now, you know? So I have shit like that I have to contend with when I make my choice.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. Video games.
Yeah, anyways, video games. Yeah. It's a fucking nightmare.
Life is a nightmare. Do you want to talk about your game, Tim?
God, please. Let's do some good old escapism.
All right, next game to talk about is called Golftopia, developed and published by Minmax Games, released July 21st on Steam Early Access for $19.99. Design, build, and manage your own futuristic golf course. Keep 200 persistent visitors fed, hydrated, and happy. Defend your creation from a growing infestation of weeds with robotic workers and defensive turrets. Evolve your course into a mega resort where nobody wants to go home ever. Tim, tell us about Golftopia.
Where nobody wants to go. Hey, Golftopia. All right, so yeah, this game is in early access, just released in early access. So, you know, this is an early access kind of review, preview sort of dealio. Yeah, Golftopia is a golf course builder sim game, the likes of which, as far as I can tell, has not been seen in a standalone video game capacity in a very long time. Near as I could tell, the last game dedicated to simulated golf was Sid Meier's Sim Golf, which was like almost 20 years ago at this point.
Old,
you know, there have been games where that have had course builders, but those were more focused on, you know, being a game of golf simulation first. And like, then it was, oh, and also, yes, you can build courses and whatever, but you're mostly there to play golf at Pebble Beach or whatever the fuck. This is straightforward. First thing is first, this is a simulation, sort of simulation, a fantastical simulation, golf course builder game, where, yeah, the game will gin up a randomly generated island for you to start on. You smack down your clubhouse, and then you start putting down golf tees and fairways and setting where you want the hole to be, you know, cutting rough and grass and all kinds. So that's the basic gist of it is you put down your tee, you make your fairway, you put your hole at the other end, and then golfers will come. They just kind of fly in into your clubhouse and shuttle down, and they'll go out there and start golfing. And when they finish a hole, you get money. And so you want your course to be profitable, because you'll have, you know, you spend money to, you know, build a tee, to build a hole, to build, like, benches, and as you alluded to, like, snack machines and bathrooms and stuff like that. And also when you're cutting, when you're making, like, sand traps or certain kinds of terrain, like... Like, it's not rough, like, it's not straight grass, it's rough that is cut on, like, the edges of your fairway. Like, that has to be maintained, so that has a maintenance cost to it. So there is a certain amount of upkeep to that. But on top of that, the game also has a bunch of fantastical, futuristical shit that you can drop on your golf course. Like, one, you can hustle your golfers around in pneumatic tubes. like, when you go through the drive-thru at the bank, That is how they get around. So you will build like a network of pneumatic tubes to shoot people around in. just like on your course, there's all kinds of like obstacles or stuff you could put down there, like pinball bumpers, like giant fans to help the ball like fly over gaps of water that they wouldn't be able to make it over otherwise. You know, flaming hoops, stuff like that. You can get weird with it, like that. And yeah, so like, yeah, you'll have robots that go around your course and, fix weeds and stuff like that. So it's not strictly grounded in reality. Like there, the look of it, there's a lot of neon in it, I guess, to add to that futuristic quality, but it's a really nice looking game. Overall, I think, I mean, obviously it's not pushing like your graphic card to the max, but it like everything about it looks very nice and clear, and it's easy to see stuff and distinguish what's what on your course. You can also, I mean, yeah, there's just like lots of stuff you can do with the terrain and structures. You know, you put down lights because people will golf any time of day. You can, manipulate like the elevation of the terrain up or down. What are the some of the other stuff you're placing around? Yeah, you can remove and add trees, remove and add rocks. Just do lots of little decor touches just to make your course just, you know, straight up look nice. But when it comes down to it, you are trying to make a golf course that is attractive and fun for your virtual golfers to play. So, like, you know, you can see the golfers going around and playing your course. And you can see, like, when they're happy, and they'll make a little frowny face when they're mad. And you can click on them to see what their complaint is. And usually, in my experience, it's like, oh, I made a bad shot. And, oh, my ball's in a bad place. And I'm like, oh, try getting good. but, you know, you kind of have to skirt the line between making your course challenging so it's entertaining, and but not too challenging such that people are just getting pissed off at you. And, like, there is a... there's like buttons you can click on just to kind of see like, oh, this is where weeds are growing on your course. This will highlight like the spots where people are complaining and getting mad. You can kind of look at that and try to figure out what's irking them. Like, oh, is this shot just too hard? Are they ending up in the rough too much? Is it too dark? Are there trees in the way? Like, do they have a valid complaint? Like, whatever. You can also, like, when you're building a hole, so what you'll do is you'll put down the tee, and then you will put down a hole, and it will just naturally mark that as, like, okay, you are building the fourth or fifth or whatever-th hole of your course. But, you know, as you set it down, it doesn't open for golfers to play on until you click a button that says unlock. And until that point, you know, before you open a hole, there's a mode where you can simulate golfers, and it will just like launch. It will simulate like 10 golfers playing the hole all at once, and you'll see their balls like taking shots, bouncing all over, so you can get a feel for, like, okay, like, on average, how are, you know, how good is a golfer going to do on this course? Like, is there something that is going to make their ball fly off into the water? Are a lot of golfers going to shoot it into the water? Is it going to be just a few? So you can kind of sit there and tweak and figure things out even before you open a hole. I had, you know, I kind of started out like, all right, you know, I'm just going to make a couple basic holes. Just kind of like follow the basic steps. The game does a good job, I think, of tutorializing things and like rolling things out in at a pace that's easy to understand. And then by the third hole, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to have them like shoot over top of some water, you know, tee off over like this pond here with the green on the other side. And I'm like, okay, you know, I ran the simulation. I was like, okay, I got to move the tee a little bit closer because half the golfers aren't getting the ball over the damn pond on the first shot. Like, that's not going to work. And then I was like, oh, okay, well, crap. If they're shooting and then they have to walk around the pond, that's going to like slow down the pace of golfers getting through the course, which slows down me getting money. So I'm like, okay, well, then I have to build a pneumatic tube here for them to step in and shoot them to the other side so things can move along. And then I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to drop a bunch of snack machines in bathrooms and shit here too, because that's probably a good idea. And it was. So yeah, there's just like a lot of fun. It's just like, I don't really have anything to complain about. Like,
no about negatives, nothing at all.
Not really. And this is, you know, this just entered early access, and it is like a very, you know, it feels like a pretty complete game already. There is definitely ways I can see for them to expand it, which I'll get to in a second. But yeah, like, it's just very chill to play. Like, the music is nice and chill. Like, the game has a nice, colorful look to it. I had an easy time, you know, kind of seeing what was going on with my course and managing things. There's a guy going around. There's a guy who works for you called Dr. Manager. And you can click on Dr. Manager and play the course, like, in a very simplified fashion, where it's like, okay, he'll go up to the first tee and you just kind of aim the shot, and he will do his Dr. Manager best to shoot it where you tell him to aim it. It doesn't always go that way. His skill will go up the more you play with him, but you can kind of sit there and like do a very like basic run, like through your course to kind of start to get an even better, like more in depth feel of like how it actually plays and like what the golfers are actually doing, by seeing it more firsthand. I wouldn't mind if they expanded, that piece a little more and gave it a little more depth with you, like, you know, at, like, making it more of a golf sim. Like, yes, I like that this is a golf course creator first, but, you know, when I make these holes and all this stuff, like, I really want to kind of get down there and, like, play them for real. That would be cool. I think maybe there's some room to add, like, some different, like, weather effects, some different settings. Like, I don't know if you want a T-Rex or a Godzilla to attack your island necessarily to mess stuff up. That doesn't seem like maybe that kind of game. Maybe they could give you, like some set scenarios might be interesting for, you know, turn this, shithole of an island profitable in X amount of time, or just like make it an island with like really tricky geography to try to, or topography as it were, just to try to like build a course on. Some customized challenges like that I think would be nice. 'Cause as it is now, it's just like, well, you start a new game, you pick an island, and then you go for it. I should say you don't have access to the whole island off the bat. You have to buy, like, it's split into 9 sections. You have to buy each section. They get more expensive as you go, but yeah. I don't know. It's but yeah, it's already like, for a game that just hit early access, it already feels pretty good.
So since it is an early access, we don't give a full on review. So just got to ask, at the $20 price tag, is this something that people should be investing in right now? Or should you wait and see on this?
I think it is worth getting into now. Honestly, if they had released this game, if they had just released this game last week and it wasn't early access, I would probably give it a buy. like, really, like, it's already in good shape. But the fact that, you know, theoretically from now, it's only going to get, you know, better and more feature rich, just seems good. I mean, like, it's not janky. It's not like, oh, there's, you know, graphical textures missing, or like, oh, music is coming in later, or we're adding more of this later. Like, no, it already feels like a pretty complete game. But, you know, he has more stuff to do. There's a lot of, like, tournaments and more structures to add. So, yeah, there's more to come. There's more stuff going in. There's more to come, but they say they are not changing the price when it leaves early access, so it's not going to get cheaper or more expensive. I mean, at the very, very least, you should put this stuff on your wish list, because, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it sounds pretty awesome.
And there's not, like I said, the first golf course simulation game in, like, 20 years that I know of. Like, come on.
Yeah, I might have to give this one a go myself. As a kid, I always wanted to design my own golf courses, so now...
Yeah.
I could try and be creative for once in my life. Yay.
Yeah, you can do that. You can, oh, you can get rid of weeds with like mortars that launch weed killer at them. Golfers don't like it when they get hit by that, but you know, it's just, yeah, there's fun stuff to it. It's not, you know, trying to be over serious or anything. It's cool. I really like it.
Cool. All right. Well, Tim, we'll let you get going. We got one more game to talk about with Jacob. So do you have any final words before we let you go?
Oh, yes. When we were talking last week about the Xbox reveal, and God, I forgot the name of the game already. That freaking... what is the name of that game that the Knights creator is making?
Oh, Ballin' Wonderland?
Yeah, that. I finally put my finger on exactly what I like about it, and that it looks like... if Super Mario Odyssey was made by Sega, like that's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, kind of does.
Yeah, that's what I was getting out of it. So hype. Okay.
All right. And finally tonight, we're bringing in our good friend, Jacob Garner. Jacob, how are you doing? Good answer.
It's been a day.
It has been a day. It's been a day for everyone. Cole, has it been a day for you?
Well, I just dropped my controller and my kid come out of a room, so yes.
Oh, no, you had to see your children?
Yeah, it's terrible.
Oh, that's awful.
At least my kids are actually cute, though.
My kids are cute.
My cats are cute.
Yeah, okay. We all have cute kids. Dang.
Okay.
Oh my God! What is wrong with us?
Oh no, am I still there? Okay. Woo.
What are you breaking?
Where I dropped my controller, the right bumper got stuck, but I fixed it. We're good.
That could have been disastrous.
Yeah, if somebody had run up on me and I needed to throw something at them, yes.
How often does that happen in your house?
I mean, I'm playing Call of Duty because you broke our shit and we got to do it again. And I was in the middle of a game.
What do you mean I broke your
shit? You broke our
shit. I didn't break it.
Clearly, we can blame Carnage for this.
Definitely.
Why him?
Jacob. Why not him? Do you want the blame, Jacob? Do you want the blame?
I kind of accept the blame. I mean, I mean, it's been the standard for the last few years, so, you know.
But it's my blame.
It's the only thing he has left in this world.
That and doing social media, which updated, same day for Facebook and Twitter for the last two podcasts.
That is insane.
Give him a cookie.
I think it's actually a record.
It might be.
We are on a two-podcast streak.
Otherwise, people are going to start to expect it.
True.
It's your fault.
If people have any expectations at all with this show anymore, that's on them at this point.
I mean, I think the only expectation that you can have is that each episode runs for like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Speaking of, it's been a long one,
so let's get to this last game.
Speaking of long ones.
Speaking of long, that's what she said. That's what she wishes she said. She's stuck with us. So.
Wait, who's she?
I don't know. Call?
Not it.
She's like, I will not touch either of you. I will set fire.
This is not happening. I will burn this motherfucker down before this happens.
I have checked out of this conversation. I was only half-assed checked into it. Now I'm just gone.
Well, now you could check out all the way, because we're going to talk about a game that you didn't play called Lunchapalooza, developed by Seashell Studio, published by Alternative Software, released July 22nd on Xbox One for $19.99, coming later this year to Switch and PS4. Lunchapalooza is a game for everyone with its easy-to-learn controls and fast-paced random matches. It's perfect for both the beginner and seasoned gamer alike. The goal is to be the last food standing. You must use special attacks and food items to dominate the opposition. Jacob, tell us about Lunchapalooza.
So, wait, did we already mention that, like, we had to record this again? We did, right?
Briefly, yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure. All right. Just double checking. I mean, because, you know, usually, you know, we were heaping on the guilt, so.
Yeah, yeah. For, just in case people didn't get it yet, the recording the first time we did this didn't work. So, let's all make fun of Joe for his shit not working.
Yeah. Your new computer is working really well, Joe.
I don't know why it does this. I even tested to make sure that it was picking up desktop audio, and it picked up the music that I played on Winamp, but it didn't pick up Skype, and I don't know why.
It picked up my micro penis.
Tell us about Lunchapalooza, or I will not give you any more games to review.
All right, so Lunchapalooza. Imagine the fighting gameplay of Super Smash Brothers mixed in with pretty much like the party mode and camera angle of a Mario Party game, and have it set in like a cafeteria or a restaurant, and you pretty much have Lunchapalooza. Yeah, you can choose one of eight characters in it. You start off with four. The other four are unlocked. Two of them are unlocked through time. I don't know how the other two are unlocked. I Blood of the Innocents,
yeah.
You know, something. I don't know. Anyway, so you start off with a hamburger, Jell-O. But it's not Jell-O. It's Jell-O dessert or some
gelatin. Dessert.
Gelatin, because, you know, Jell-O is a craft or a trademark. Of craft, I think. What else do you have? I unlocked pizza. You get that guy after you've played for 20 minutes. Also, I found out what the other guy is. It's a meatball.
Mm.
The one I couldn't identify earlier. Yeah, it's a meatball. And also,
I like that you keep bringing up earlier. Let's just keep digging that knife in
up?
A little harder. Dig that knife in about earlier that didn't work. You dick.
What, you mean like when you didn't record stuff correctly, Joe? Gee whiz. That'd be terrible if I brought up that time over and over again.
No, you ass.
all right, so the other one's Corn on the Cob, and pretty much you just have to duke it out between them. Now, there you can use items on the table. There are environment stuff, like a spatula will come waving through, or there's a top that will sometimes spin on the table on one of the levels. And so there's all sorts of stuff. The level design is really fun, and honestly, it's the best feature of the game, which is really unfortunate, because the gameplay, while simplistic, none of it ever feels like, you know, none of your hits ever actually feel like they're landing, unless you are the Jell-O guy, because you can at least see where your stuff is shooting. Now, the corn stuff, or the corn guy, yeah, like, his stuff comes out in, like, a circle, but it's still, like, you're not sure if that shit actually hits. Like, and so, like, the detection on it feels like it's crap. Everything feels like it's pure luck.
Yeah, in terms of pure luck, I played a game of this against the AI. I kind of just wanted to run the timer up and unlock some of the characters, and I put it on 99 lives, me and three computers. Now, from what I could tell, there wasn't a way to select computer difficulty. Maybe I missed something, but I just turned three computers on and myself, 99 lives, started the stage, and I put my controller down, and I did not touch it. I won with more than 50 lives remaining.
You know what? That's what I did wrong. Because in between the recordings, because they didn't go right, Joe.
What?
anyway, so like after the original recording was done, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to go check this out. And yeah, like pretty much I play second each time. Like granted, because I did it with like the defaults on stuff. But yeah, I play second on each time. I didn't even do anything.
Yeah.
And the computer just dukes it out by itself. And if you get caught in like the, you know, if you get caught in some collateral damage, then, you know, that's on you. But like the computer will just like, it'll hit you once and then it'll go off and attack the other ones. Yeah, which was kind of bizarre. And I just,
I guess it says in the description, fast paced random matches. There really doesn't seem to be a lot of rhyme or reason to the matches. And I think that's one of the big detriments of the game is it just feels too random. And go ahead.
Yeah, like it's too random. Everything feels like luck. And at the end of the day, like it's just not a really fun game. Like,
and it's expensive.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it when you had said that, like, it was $20.
Yeah.
Like,
this is some, I'd be comfortable with this being like a $10 game, but with the amount of content that's there, the fact that there's no online play, which I know you can't expect every indie game to have online.
The Steam version does have online multiplayer. They got an update recently.
Ah, so maybe online play will come to console.
Maybe.
We'll see, but I guess. Is it like actual online play, or is it like that share screen that people try to say is online, but it's not?
No, you can, because I looked it up, there is online play and you can do share screen. It lists both. Right. So, I mean, maybe it's in the cards down the road. Cause I mean, you said, it hasn't launched on PS4 and Switch yet, right?
Yeah. It's still coming to those later this year. No date.
But. Yeah. So maybe we'll get it when they get it. You know?
Possible. It could be that they're just working on getting all the console releases and then online will come. And you have to wonder if that's the plan. Will the player base survive?
That's on the assumption that there is a player base. Yeah. Because the thing is that it's just like that $20 price tag for a game like this, that's way too much. Like, even at five, I mean, granted, I'm cheap. Our longtime listeners will know that I'm a cheap ass. I would even balk at $5 for this game. It's just, it's not, I just didn't have fun. And on top of it, you know, the camera system, it never feel like I never really felt like I was able to figure like to see what I was actually doing.
No.
And on top of it, like it kept clipping through different environment parts. Like there was one part where it started clipping through the chair and I'm just like, what the crap, man? Like, was this not tested beforehand?
I don't know. The game definitely has issues as it stands. $20. Personally, I have to give it a deny. I don't see the fun there for $20. It's just, if it gets any significant updates or patches, we'll happily take another look at it. But as it stands, I got to give it a deny it.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. This is a no.
All right. Well, they can't all be winners. Cole, you can attest to that. You know all about shitty games.
Yeah, I've played a lot of them over the years.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that aren't winners, how about the Miami Marlins? First week of baseball and we get COVID.
Oh, God. This is going to go so poorly for the rest of sports.
And I'm just like, guys, like you didn't see this coming, yet you want all of the kids to go back to school in person. Like, and this just happened from three baseball games.
Yeah.
Like, fucking A, guys.
Good stuff.
Yep. We're doomed.
We are. But until we're all dead, SML Podcast will still be here. Big thanks to Don Thacker coming on, chatting with us, hanging out with us. Always good having him on. Cole, did you have fun with him?
Yes, it was a fantastic time.
And we're just saying that because we're recording ahead of schedule.
I'm sure it will be a fantastic time.
It will be, because he's a good dude.
Yeah.
Watch something happen and he can't join us.
Motherfucker, I am not recording this again.
Me neither.
Nope, I'm not recording this a third time.
Me neither.
Fuck it, we'll do it live.
Well, anyone have any final words to end the show?
Pants happy.
Pants happy?
Yeah, you asked for a word. All right, fine. Schweppervescence.
I hate you. We'll be right back.
and the crowd can't hear your bite. Get on the mic, take a breath, open up.